folks. I'm Craig Lipinski.
I'm Seth Castellum.
And I give in to peer pressure.
And this is episode 122 of the TV Unless Video Game Podcast, available at TVUnless.net, where you can download, stream, check out links for iTunes and Stitcher, or capture the RSS feed. We'd like to give you folks some options. Chris is drinking. Chris, what are you drinking?
I have a vodka lemonade.
He's a cocktail guy. I got. I have a beer here. It's a local beer. It's his. I have a Narragansett. Or Gansett, if you live around here. But it's basically like PBR. I can get 20 16-ounce cans for $18.
So is it hipster beer, Craig?
In this area, maybe. I just got it because it's cheap. You know, I really, when I was younger, like, I hated, like, lighter beers. I was like, it tastes like beer-flavored soda, you know? But, like, the older I get, the more I feel like, if I have, like, a heavier beer, like, it sits like a cement brick in my stomach. Like, ugh, what is this? So, I'm still not quite, like, a Bud Light guy, but I found that, like, whatever, I'll just drink a lighter beer. Okay. And usually they're cheaper anyway, so, whatever. And, no, Gansetts are great because they're, like, cheap and you can have a couple of them and you're still not quite drunk, but you can have a couple of them out on the porch or something. It's pretty good. I'm down with that. Yeah.
I don't really like beer, but... Go ahead, Seth.
I don't understand the point of drinking if you're not going to get drunk.
I like getting tipsy. Like, I don't like getting smashed. I like getting a little buzz. I mean, that's way better than getting smashed. Well, I'll get smashed if I'm at home because I obviously don't want to drive like that. But that happens so rarely, like, I'm not going to sit here by myself with, like, 18 cans of Gansett, like, littering my living room or anything. So usually I drink, like, while I'm out, and, you know, I can't get much more than buzz because I'm not an asshole. I'm not going to drive drunk. Actually, speaking of, I went out last night. I actually don't get to go out much anymore. It's very frustrating because, like, it seems like the older you get, like, your friends just, like, don't want to do as much. And it's a huge... You guys... Well, Chris, you don't count because you got no friends where you live. That must suck, actually. That must really fucking suck.
What, not having friends?
Well, like, where you live. I'm sure you have friends. I'm sure they just don't live in Wisconsin.
No, you guys are my only friends.
This is his only social outlet every week.
No, I do have friends. But the few friends I have here are mainly people that I work with who tend to be a little older than me and they don't like to go out or they don't like, you know, have the same interest and they get the games and stuff. So, you know, I do go out from time to time, but generally we'll go out to dinner or something or hang out, but we don't do a whole lot, you know, that, you know, play games or go out to bars or anything like that.
Mm. No,
I've become the one who doesn't like to go out with my friends. So, like, yeah, go out. No, whatever. I'm fine.
I mean, and what is that? I mean, is it laziness or, like, tiredness or just, like, a disinterest or...
A lot of times I'm tired. A lot of times I'm disinterested. Yeah, I don't know. It's a combination of all three. It just depends. Like, every once in a while I want to do something. Like, there'll be a movie I don't want to see or something, but...
Yeah.
I don't know. A lot of times I just don't feel like it.
So you would consider yourself something of a homebody?
Yeah, I guess. It's like a nicer way than hermit, I guess.
Yeah. No, because, I mean, actually, I'm actually a bit of a homebody. Like, I have a bunch of books and video games, and I have my pets. And, like, Emma's here. Like, everybody's here. Like, it's great. Like, why do I need to go anywhere? But at the same time, like, I do like going out. My home base bar, this place called David's. It's somewhere between, it's not like an upscale, like, oh, I'm going to go here and have a cosmopolitan kind of bar. But it's not a dive either. It's like somewhere comfortably in between, and not a happening scene. It's mostly just a bunch of regulars who are usually older people. Like sometimes like some younger people going, but it's like it's very relaxing. Like you just sit at the bar and have a drink. There's no commotion or anything, and that's always nice. But sometimes you just want to go where there's fucking people. Like you want to be out. So like last night we went to a place called Harp and Dragon. Are you familiar with that? Oh, Harp and Dragon, Chris?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
We went to Harp and Dragon, and there happened to be, like, a live band. I didn't fucking pay cover, because I'm fucking TV and Lust. And and that was actually a lot of fun. It was just nice to get out every now and then, because I like hanging out at home, but every now and then I just need to get the fuck out and get some fucking drinks or something. And thank God my friends are not too much like Seth.
Ha.
I'm a Seth. I don't
know. No, actually, they kind of are. That's the problem. Like... I have two best friends. One likes to go out, But then he'll be like, I don't have enough money, or like, oh, I went out like two nights in a row, I can't do it tonight. And then the other one's like, he just doesn't drink anymore. So I'm like, he's like, I'm not doing anything. He'll come over and play some games or whatever. But yeah, it's harder to get people together now. I hate getting old. Sucks.
So it'd be like some sort of old person friend website. Are you old? You hate doing things, but you still want to have friends.
Friendships.com.
I feel like that's got to exist somewhere.
Okay, probably. Yeah.
But I don't know, because like I don't feel as old as I am, and like maybe actually like because I'm almost 30, but like maybe that's not even really that old. Like I don't know how to look at it. It's very weird. Like to me, it seems like an older. Like I feel like, man, I should be diversifying my fucking portfolio right now. But I'm not. I don't want to do that, and I don't care. So, I don't know. Maybe 30 is the new 25, whatever. But for some of my friends, they're just, I'm going to stay at home and watch fucking reruns of fucking Full House.
Full House? What the fuck is that shit? Nobody watches reruns of that.
Yeah, no.
You're going to stay home. There's much better things to do than that.
That's true.
You can watch reruns of Batman Beyond. That's weird.
I don't think any of my friends watch that.
You need better friends. That's the problem. Yeah.
That might be it.
Apparently, we're not his friends, Seth.
You guys are my friends.
Yeah. I don't want these.
Can I exchange this? So, Seth, what did you do this week? You say
I did. Home? I did nothing, dude. I was beat this week. Actually, yesterday I didn't even go to work in the morning yesterday because my boss like forgot to renew his insurance license.
What?
So the company cut off access for our office to their website, so we just couldn't even do anything.
What about your clients?
Yeah, they just they had to like call the 1-800 number for like the generic whatever help instead of, you know, the personal agent help.
What? So
but luckily by the afternoon it was sorted out, I guess. After
still,
he was like
though,
calling corporate
fuck up, holy shit.
Yeah, he's kind of bad at like that sort of thing. Like it's not unexpected that happened. Let's put it that way.
Man, that's effed up.
Yep.
Well,
so that's fun. I got the morning off.
What about you, Chris? It's been a couple weeks. You were buying tables or something. What the fuck was that?
Yeah, we had to buy a table.
How many tables did you get?
We got one table and two chairs.
Nice.
We don't actually have it yet. We actually ordered it online. We did go to stores and look for tables, but we didn't find any we wanted until we looked online.
What happens if you have guests? You only have two tables or two chairs.
we're gonna buy a couple more chairs, but these chairs were rather expensive. So, being that it's generally just the two
of us,
that's we'll
get how
some
they get you
holding chairs.
That's some chairs.
Yeah, I mean they sell you the table for cheap, but then you need the chairs and just jack those prices up.
I have had my table.
Like, you don't want to stand at your table.
I've had my table forever, and I still only have two chairs. And I can't remember the last time I fucking ate at it. It's for piling mail on and Peyton, and that's what my dining room table is for.
Yeah,
and it even expands. Like I can actually pull it apart. Like it's really like you could sit four people at it, but my dining room is kind of small, so it's really only good for like two people anyway. But it does actually expand. Like you just pull it apart, and you don't actually have to put the leaves in. Like there's actually like it pops up from underneath, and I'm like, fuck, yeah, that's really cool,
like
right?
Like a Gundam table.
Right, it transforms. But still, like, I'm never going to have four. I don't even have two people at my table, let alone four or six. Like, I don't need to expand this thing. I don't even know where I would get chairs to match it anymore anyway. I'd have this hodgepodge of Walmart furniture or something.
Does that mean we're not doing Thanksgiving at your house this year, Craig?
Probably not. Sorry.
Yeah, we have Jackie's grandparents coming to visit next month, so we wanted to get a table for them to be able to eat at, because I don't know if they're super excited to be sitting on the couch and eating dinner, so we wanted to get a table before they come. But it's going to go in our kitchen, because we basically turned our dining room into like an office, where that's where we have the computer and some bookshelves and stuff, so we had to get something smaller, and it's hard to find something that's going to, you know, fit in the kitchen, so...
Our dining room, Emma has her horror movie collection in there, and I have an arcade cabinet in there. And then there's like a table, just kind of, like, if I didn't have that shit in there, like, I could probably expand the table, but Nah, fuck that.
My week's been pretty much like that. This morning I spent the morning mowing the lawn and trying to get the backyard looking decent, because whoever owned the house before us did not take care of the yard, so like grass doesn't want to grow and shit.
Oh Jesus!
So it looks like garbage.
Well,
but hopefully now that we put some seed down, it'll look a little better soon.
Good luck with that.
Why don't you just not have Mexicans?
This is Wisconsin. How many Mexicans do you think are in the entire state?
I don't know. We have Mexicans for the yard here.
You're California. There's Mexicans everywhere.
You're pretty close to Mexico, Seth.
They're coming out of the floorboards. I don't know, man.
Well, what do you guys have for like yard work out there?
We have me. I don't know. I gotta call somebody to do yard. I guess you get
the white people.
Yeah, you know, no. My ex's one of my ex's brother-in-law. Did like yard care, and he's a total white dude, and yeah.
Jackie said that one of her students' dad owns like a gardening business, so he might come out and help us. Well, help us, you know, we hire him.
What now?
They're Hmong, so.
I was gonna say he's ethnic, so maybe that counts.
Yeah. Maybe. He's not white, I'll tell you that.
We can't do anything with the backyard here because we're like literally backed up to a canyon and there's just like a million gophers.
You have a canyon and gophers?
Yep.
I'm living in the wrong state.
Why do you want gophers? I mean, the majority of them aren't even gophers, they're voles. So.
What the fuck is a vole?
Yeah, this is new.
What's a vole?
This motherfucker has like voles and like those bugs that eat things. Like, man,
silverfish.
This is a stupid wild
silverfish that aren't fish and voles.
Look, a vole, they're cute, dude. They're like gopher mice or something.
Can you keep them as pets?
Maybe.
Hmm. Well, do we want to talk about some video game news sometime?
No.
Video game podcast? No. Well, let's do it anyway. Let's see. Harmonix has announced their newest game. It's in collaboration with Disney. It's Fantasia. And from what I gather, you wave your arms around like a moron. It's Dance Central for white people. So there's that. I really don't know what this game is yet. So
this, because the trailer was stupid shit.
Yeah. The trailer was not the game.
No. No.
It was just some dudes like moving their hands around and sparkles followed along.
For all our listeners, I will show you what the trailer was. See what I'm doing now? That's the trailer.
That was the same music too.
Chris and alcohol is best, Chris.
I agree with this.
All right, so we got Fantasia. It's a thing. It's coming. It'll probably. I mean, I don't know if it's for me. That doesn't sound like it's something, but it could be neat for some people. I guess. I mean, they seem to be, you know, doing well with Guitar Hero, Rock Band, Dance Central. They seem to know what they're doing, even if it's not necessarily for me.
Plus, they got Disney back in this one, right?
Yeah, there is that. So that's good news.
I don't get why it's Fantasia. Like, it wasn't just like some generic modern pop songs that were in there or something.
I don't know, that was
Fantasia's
weird. It wasn't just
music,
like classical music or something.
And stuff, so yeah, well, that's true. But I think tying it into Fantasia, at least even if it's in name only, still kind of makes sense.
Yeah, but do people like Fantasia?
Yes.
I guess people have seen Fantasia like it, but I mean, it's not exactly like The Lion King or anything like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I guess it's got some recognition because it's Disney, but it's not like, I mean, they don't even put Disney in the name, like, you know, Disney Epic Mickey or, you know, every game that has Disney right there in the title.
That's true.
It's just Fantasia Music Evolved, which is...
Fantasia's a fantastic movie.
Look how far we've come.
I'm not saying it's a bad movie, but I don't know how much, you know, brand cachet that's going to have.
Right, so.
People recognize the name, I'm sure, but they're going to be like, where's Mickey and the Sorcerer's Hat, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll be there.
Walking broomsticks.
Exactly. Those are the two things that everybody knows about Fantasia.
They only know the Sorcerer's... Yeah, I'm about to say, like, there's more than just the Sorcerer's Apprentice.
No, I know there is, but
right,
I don't know
if
everybody knows.
Right, but that's iconic about it. Like, that's
I love Fantasia. All right, anyway.
Anyway. We got Metal Gear Solid 5's new Snake voice actor has been announced.
And Kiefer Sutherland.
It's Kiefer Sutherland. And I just, all I'm thinking is Snake, we've got to stop the terrorists. There's no time. Beep, boom, beep, boom, beep, boom, beep, boom. And I'm like, I don't know about this.
Isn't he busy making 12 anyway?
I did 12. Half day. They should call it that. Yeah, I don't know how. I mean, Kiefer Sutherland, I guess I've never really thought about his voice, but yeah, I mean, I guess it sounds all right, but it just, it seems like a weird, weird choice. I don't know. And then he's like, oh yeah, this is great to be part of this. And I'm like, how many Metal Gear Solid games have you played, motherfucker? Like, really?
he looked like he didn't know the franchise at all. I don't know.
And that's fine, but don't blow smoke up our ass and go like, oh, I'm so proud to be part of this. But dude, you are, this is your meal ticket. Like, you are paying the rent with this check. Like, you're not doing, and that's okay. It's a job. I get it. But you don't have to pander, Kiefer Sutherland. It's okay. Lost Boys.
I think the official line from Kojima was that they wanted a real actor because it syncs up the face.
Yeah, they're doing like
stuff. Yeah, I mean, it does make a little bit of sense. And I mean, it's not. I mean, and who is this? Isn't this like a? Isn't this Naked Snake in the 80s?
Yeah, so it's Big Boss.
Yeah, this is Big Boss.
It's Big Boss. So I mean, it's not like it's Solid, and it takes place sometime after, you know, MGS3. So, I mean, maybe a different voice actor is not necessarily the weirdest thing, but I don't know. We'll see how it plans out. It just strikes me as a very strange choice.
Yeah. I was hoping they were going to use the guy who did it at the end of 4 when Big Boss appears there. You know, since they already have two actors there and they don't want to use David Hayter, but, I mean, I guess with the motion capture stuff, maybe they wanted to do, you know, a quote-unquote real actor for that reason.
Fair enough.
Whatever. I'll wait and see.
Quote unquote, because I've seen Truth or Consequences in New Mexico, which is a good movie, but God, Kiefer's acting's not that great.
Is this have they said anything? I mean, are we still expecting this for 360 and PS3?
I think that's the official line still.
That's the official line, but.
Right. And heaven help me if it's on the newer systems, because I mean, I play all the. I'm not the biggest fan of Metal Gear Solid, if I'm being honest, for a variety of reasons, but I play them. I do play them, but. Heaven help me if it's on the newer systems, because I'm not all that interested in those. We'll get to that a little bit later.
I think it'll get a PC release. I mean, they're freaking getting Metal Gear Rising on PC now, so...
That's true. Seth, that means nothing to us.
Because...
When the time comes.
If
X-Boner and PS4 are pieces of shit... I might just do that, but we'll see.
At this point, it means nothing to us, but
right.
We'll see after E3.
A new Game Center CX game has been announced for 3DS. It's being developed by G-Rev, which seems like a strange choice. Because first of all, because IndieZero is a great studio, and they did such a great job with the first two games, so it seems like a very strange... what the hell are they doing now? I mean, I don't know if they have any projects on the table. They have nothing announced that I know of. And G-Rev has only done shoot 'em ups. That's all they've ever done. So it seems like a very strange choice. But, man, I really hope this comes to the West. I mean, now more Western players know what Game Center is. You know, with digital distribution, maybe someone like Xseed might be a little bit more... Because I mean, I would just import the Japanese one to have the physical copy for my collection, and then download.
Is this a 3DS game?
I'm fairly certain it is a 3DS game. Yes.
Okay.
So I mean, even if it came to digital distribution, I mean, I think that would be great. And I hope Xseed. I'm sure Xseed's considering it. Xseed does. You know, Xseed's a good publisher, and I'm pretty sure they're probably already considering it. But even still, just download. I think that would be a great option. Because, man, what a great show. And the channel on YouTube I was watching it on got yanked off, like, right in the middle of an episode I was watching. I finished the episode, I'm like, oh, let's watch another one. Boom, gone.
There's a website. I think they were, like, rehosting a bunch of episodes on Dailymotion. So okay. I think you could watch them there.
Getting into that. Like, I mean, I think I talked about it, like, last episode or something. And I was really getting into the show. I mean, it's such a fantastic show. I mean, not just from, you know, a video gamer perspective, but just all the stuff. It's funny, the different locations they visit. It's such a great show. And, I gotta figure out some other way to watch it, because I was really digging it.
trying to remember. Like, it's like the official website for the people who are translating it, and they have everything.
Right, because, I mean, it was you that was telling me that something awful that translates it, right? Some dude's yeah. something awful. So you would think that they would host it somewhere. I mean, YouTube seems like the most convenient place for people to watch it, but I'm sure that those people who are translating it, you know, are hosting it somewhere else. They'd be silly not to, but I just got to figure out where it is because...
GamingCX.com.
GamingCX.com, all right. So that, yep. that's for... and then those are those just download files, or are they, like, embedded in any way?
No, they're... let me hit play. Yeah, they're Daily Motion right now. They're all on Daily Motion.
And is it a bunch of them?
Yep, I think it's all of them.
Oh, okay, so GamingCX.com, that's good. That's news for me. That's news for our listeners. And if cool. you haven't checked out Game Center CX, guys, you really, really have to check it out. It's such an awesome, awesome show. I love it. And I'm looking forward to this new game. I'd like to see how it comes out, especially from a developer that's done nothing but shoot 'em ups and good shoot 'em ups. They've done, like, Under Defeat. You know, I'm pretty sure G-Rev did Senku no Ronde, which was ported to the 360, and that's a really interesting, like, shoot 'em up fighter hybrid. So, you know, they're a competent developer, but they have their niche, and it's not Game Center CX, so. and now, here's something a bit more meatier. Microsoft has pulled the curtain on their limitations, their restrictions, their rules on how and when you can play games on your Xbox One. And... some of this stuff seems pretty... There are a couple things that seem really cool. For instance, I mean, all your games are tied to your account. So even if you buy a disc at the store, it installs right to your hard drive, and then you never need the disc again. You might as well... It's a coaster. You know, you can't even lend it to a friend, and they can install it because it's got a unique ID in some way, and you can't even do that. It's nothing. It goes up on the shelf after that point. You never have to take it down. But because everything's tied to your account, it's tied to your account and it's tied to your console. So if you have, you know, siblings or a significant other or whatever, they can play on the console with their gamer tag.
Yeah, I think they're set up to like 10 gamer tags on a console, right?
Well, that's actually something a bit different. It's everything on the, it's as many gamer tags that are actually like local on that console, that were created on that console, because they must track that as well.
Right.
But you can also, because your library is tied to your gamer tag, you can then go to a friend's house, sign in, and hopefully it's a bit easier than what it is, because it takes, there's like a little progress bar and everything when you sign in at someone else's console. It's kind of a pain. But you can sign in at a friend's house, and you can then download your game. I mean, these games are going to be big, so it seems like such a straight, oh, you want to play an Xbox game? Yeah, let me just sign in. Now let's fucking go do something for 5 hours before we can play
yeah,
this game.
Yeah, you're probably going to want to bring that disc still to install it.
Right, because yeah. you can play while it's installing. But that's a good point, because if you have the disc and then you sign in, you should hypothetically have access to it. Now, here's the thing. Your Xbox One has to communicate with Xbox Live once every 24 hours to ensure that your licenses are up to date. Everyone's angry about this. I'm not happy about this, mainly because of what it means for the future. Not necessarily now. Because let's be honest, this is not going to be a problem for most people most of the time. It's going to be a problem 10, 15, 20 years from now when my games can't be authenticated anymore. Because Microsoft, it's not like Microsoft, you know, doesn't have a history of discontinuing services. I mean, look at the original Xbox Live. That doesn't exist anymore. You can't play Halo 2 on your original Xbox anymore. So it's not like they're, you know, not above discontinuing services. They have, and I'm sure they will with this. So that sucks. If you are signed in at a friend's house, I think it's like an hour or 2 hours.
Yeah, I think it's an hour is what I read.
That it checks. That makes sense. I guess I get that. But on your home console, that means you can't play games offline, like single-player games completely offline, which just is kind of annoying. I don't think it's going to affect that many people most of the time, but it's still stupid. Because each game is, like, unique, whether you download it or you get it from a disc, each game is basically a unique license. You can't rent games. At least not yet. There might be some way Microsoft sets up a service where games can be rented, but as of right now, you can't rent games. There's no private selling. And this is a problem for people like us, and I'm sure many of our listeners, where we routinely buy and play games that are 10, you know, 15, 20 years old. You can't do that with this machine. You can't go back and be like, oh, man, I missed out on that game. Let me go check it out on eBay. Nope. Because eBay is not an authorized retailer.
Yep. It's just not private sellers.
No private sellers. That's what that means. There is a loaning option. You can't just give this to your friend and be like, hey, check this game out. Basically, the person has to be on your friends list for 30 days. Microsoft wants to make sure you guys are BFFs before you really do this. So they have to be on your friends list for 30 days, and it sounds like you actually give the license to them.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it's a loan at all.
It doesn't sound like a loan at all.
It's a complete give.
It's a give. I'm giving you my license. And then they can't give it to anyone else. It's one transfer of license. One time. Ugh. That blows my fucking mind. And I don't loan out games a lot because I'm kind of protective. But I do occasionally loan games to my brother. I think one of Emma's friends has a couple of my games right now. So it does occasionally happen. I have a big library and people want to borrow games. And I won't be able to do it now. That blows my mind.
And I'm pretty sure the wording for both the loaning and the trading into authorized locations says that it's up to the publisher of the game.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, so that's where we'll get to that now. So with used games... it has to be through an authorized retailer that's basically hooked up to Microsoft's network so they can authorize and deauthorize games. So if you take a disc and you install it to your hard drive, you play the game, now you want to trade it, and you go to GameStop, what happens is when that ping check happens every 24 hours on your console, after you trade that game in, Microsoft Live checks it out and goes, oh, you do not have permission to this anymore because you traded in at GameStop, and then it disallows you from playing that game. So it has to be an authorized retailer. And Microsoft has said – I hate giving the dictator credit, but they have said that we're not going to charge any fees for used games or anything. Like, they are at the absolute very least leading by example here. And they're saying that, like, we're not going to charge any fees for used games. But we're going to leave that up to the publishers, which is totally passing the buck, because you know that's exactly why EA ditched their online passes, and B, don't want to develop games for Nintendo platforms anymore. So EA can say, okay, so you go to the store, you go to GameStop, you buy this used game, and you put it in your Xboner, and now you just pay for that game, but now you have to pay us some undisclosed amount to now activate the game, so we can get a cut of that pie. And the problem I have with this, I felt like online passes were sort of like this very tenuous, uncomfortable balance. I kind of understood that. You weren't locked completely out of the game, but the publisher got, you know, $10 from you. Nobody liked that, not even me. But I understand why it happened, and I think that, like, it was probably the best middle ground we could hope for. This could hypothetically lock you out of the entire game unless you pay the fee. And that to me, that's taking it way too far.
I don't like anything about this.
No.
At all.
Yeah.
No. Absolutely not. Now, I take that back. There is one thing I find interesting. Microsoft has said that you can authorize up to 10, they say 10 family members. I don't know if they're going to do a DNA test on this shit, but because apparently they want to make sure that you're, you know, super best friends with all your friends on your Xbox Live friends list first. But with you can authorize, I think, is it 9 other people or is it 10 other people? Is it 10 people in total or is it 10 people other than yourself? I wasn't clear on that.
I'll have to relook at the wording.
Whatever. But it's either 9 or 10, but you can authorize either 9 or 10 family members access to your library. And I would imagine that means it's remote access. Because I don't live with any family. You know, like, who the fuck lives with 10 family members? Isn't the fucking Brady Bunch? So I am sure that it means that you don't have to be on the same IP address or anything like that. I hear that there's a restriction that only 2 people can be playing at the same time, can actually actively be playing a game at the same time, but you can authorize 9 or 10 family members access to your library. And, you know, for what it's worth, that's really only something you can do with digital distribution. That is actually not that bad of a thing. That is actually a pretty cool thing. I actually kind of like that. But the fact that it comes with 1,000,001 fucking caveats, no thanks. And there's just so much wrong with this. Like, number one, it does nothing for the consumer. It does everything for the publishers. It's exactly like store-specific DLC. That doesn't do anything for the consumer. It does everything for the stores. Doesn't do anything for you. And that's what this is. I am really concerned about the future. I mean, if you, I mean, a lot of gamers are, they're probably just as short-sighted as the publishers, and they're just looking for instant gratification. Look, that's what you want. That's fine. I mean, no judgment. But the problem is, if you're concerned about this hobby as an art form, because, I mean, we're still looking for the Citizen Kane of gaming or whatever, which is, I think, is horse shit. But if you consider this, like, an art form, and you're and we're constantly trying to improve it, like, imagine for the sake of argument that the Citizen Kane of gaming comes is created during this era of the X-Boner. And how do you revisit that in 20 or 30 or 50 years? You can't. You can't. It's this intangible, ephemeral thing that just exists in the nether. And
it's disposable gaming is what it is, really.
It totally treats it like it's disposable. And for people like, I mean, I can only speak for myself here, but I'm sure you guys and many of our listeners agree, for people that really appreciate gaming, you know, the industry, appreciate the industry, the hobby, the art of design, you know, collecting, all of this, you guys should be just as worried as us. Like, that's, it's bad news bears.
Yeah. The thing I find kind of ridiculous about this is the reason I don't trade in games is because I think I might want to play them, you know, down the line. Who knows? And they're trying to prevent us from trading in games by not letting us play them down the line. You know, it makes no sense.
That's the problem. Like, they're really making it impossible for you to, like, well, not impossible, very, very difficult to trade in or loan or whatever, because it's very, and it's very short-sighted. It's basically, I mean, you can tell how short-sighted it is, how much they don't understand, because when Xbox Live, when you don't have access to Xbox Live for that 24-hour ping check, they're like, you can still listen to music and watch your movies, and it goes to show that, like, they're so out of touch that they're being really short-sighted. I mean, the music and the movie industry are the biggest bunch of whiners about making money, and even they don't do this shit.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact that you could still play your music and your movies, but you can't play your games, I mean, that just goes to show that, like, this is such a young medium, and we're already cutting it off at the fucking knees. And that upsets me. That's my problem. Everyone's like, what about my rights and freedoms? You have no rights or freedoms. You don't. Like, this is, it's a console. It's a product. They put it out. They can put it out any kind of product that they want, and you have a choice whether you want to buy it or not. But you don't have any right to a console that is exactly what you want it to be. I'm not concerned about rights or freedoms. I'm just concerned about the future of something that I love.
It sort of reminds me of that whole Spore ordeal where you had, like, three lifetime installs from your game disc, and then that was it. But, like, on an entire console level. And there was a huge uproar over that Spore DRM.
Yes.
And people are not happy about this either. Like, I go on message boards everywhere. I probably, like, one in every like 15 people is okay with this.
Right. There are some apologists. Like, I've talked to some people where they're like, oh, the publishers need more money. Like, you know, people need to make money off the. And I'm actually totally in line with that. Like, that's why that's why I've always felt like, you know, the $10 online passes or, like, the DLC. Like, that was always, like, this really delicate balance between giving us something for what we paid for, but trying to make a little bit more on your investment. I've always been like, okay, I don't like this, but I understand why it's happening, you know. But this is crazy. And you have people making apologies for this, like, publishers got to make their money. Of course, they got to make their money, but they're going to make their money. It's basically like the record labels. It's not going to the artists. They're going to lay those motherfuckers. They're going to get 400 people to make this game, and they're going to lay them off. You think EA is going to trickle that money down? Fuck no. They're going to stick it in their own pockets, man.
Yeah. I know we've said this numerous times before, but I mean, I don't think used games and piracy are the issue. I mean, they are an issue, but, you know, they wouldn't have prevented Tomb Raider from being a failure at 3.5 million copies. You know, if it hadn't been available used, it still wouldn't have sold whatever they needed it to sell. That's my opinion anyway.
Right. I mean, Tomb Raider is like the perfect example of this where, I mean, I feel like we're being punished here. That's what it is. The consumer is being punished for the mistakes of the industry. And I mean, I feel like sometimes the consumers are our expectations can be kind of fucked up, and we expect these super huge games where actually most publishers really can't deliver on that, and they try to, and then they go out of business. That's also their fault too, of course. But Tomb Raider's a perfect example. That was a B-tier franchise for so long. And then it sells 3.5 million copies in less than a month. And, like, no other Tomb Raider's done that. And they're still disappointed with those sales. So, like, we did our job there. As consumers, as players, we went, oh, that looks good. And 3.5 million of us went out and bought it in less than a month. We did what we were supposed to do. Square Enix fucked up somewhere. But now, right. Now they're making us pay because they fucked up.
I really wonder what their expectations for that game were.
I mean,
it's ridiculous. You can't expect Tomb Raider to do Call of Duty numbers. It's just never going to happen.
I heard that it was because, like, their last game, whatever, Hitman maybe, didn't meet expectations, so that just kind of got shifted onto Tomb Raider, which may be the case, but, you know, that still doesn't excuse it. It's ridiculous.
Yep. Yep. The thing is, I'm not even angry about this. Like, I'm annoyed. I'm not angry. I look at this and I go, this is not for me. Like, this is the direction gaming's going. It's just not for me. And then you have, like, these people are like, look at Steam. What about Steam? Steam is a closed platform, is a closed store, but exists on an open platform. So you have Windows, right? Or, you know, OS X or whatever you're running. But you have more options than just Steam storefront. And right. That's what helps keep prices down on Steam.
Yeah, if you don't want to go to Steam, you can go to Good Old Games or
Desura or so, or even just the game's website. You can go to, you know, ftlgame.com and download Faster Than Light. You don't have to go through Steam.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas on the Xbox One, that is a closed platform. Once you get that box in your living room, they have no incentive of doing those crazy sales or discounts or bundles. Yeah. They might. That's totally. But you know what you're doing is you're exchanging all the things you used to be able to do up front in hopes that your dictator is benevolent later. And the truth is they have no incentive to be benevolent. Once you have your closed platform box in your living room, they have you by the balls. That's it. You want to play Call of Duty, you're going to pay up for that. That's it. Done.
Yeah. I love the idea of, you know, some of these incentives they're giving us, you know, like being able to share the game with 10 of your friends or not having to play with the disc. But, you know, I'm not going to assume that prices are going to be lower like Steam just because, you know, it could be. I certainly don't think that's going to be the case. I mean, if you look at Xbox Live now, you know, Gears of War that came out in 2006 or whatever is still $20 on Xbox Live. You go to GameStop, you can probably get it for $5.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Why am I going to assume that's going to be different next generation?
Nope. I mean, it's clear that they want a nickel and dime us. History has shown that Microsoft and all these big publishers don't care about lowering their price. They do it on Steam because that's what Steam. Because Steam is, I mean, yeah, Steam sucked at first. No one liked it, and Steam has become this great thing like later on. And I just don't necessarily see that happening with Xbox One. Steam also represents like a decade of gaming. You buy an Xbox One, you don't even have the last 6 years from 360. You're starting at ground zero with full price games, and that's what it's going to be. There's no competition. There's no variety. It's not Steam at all. It's not even close.
I mean, you could get 11 games on Steam right now for $6 through the Humble Bundle. And with DRM-free copies as well.
Yep. I just did that Humble Bundle, too. Actually, I'm going to talk about Proteus later because I fucking love that game. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, Humble Bundle's like almost like its own competition because, I mean, Humble Bundle, they don't have to give you Steam keys. I don't think initially they did.
Right.
I think the first few bundles, they did give you Steam keys. And that's a good example of some kind of competition with Steam. I mean, these aren't big-name games. You're not getting Assassin's Creed in, you know, the numbered Humble Bundles. But you're still getting some great games for name-your-own-price. Unless Microsoft's giving me name-my-own-price on the new Xbox Live Marketplace, like, this is not like a PC at all. This is not like Steam. It's not even close. So.
And I think Steam lets you go, like, 2 weeks without an internet check.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true, too. I'm not angry. Like, a lot of people are, like, very vitriolic angry, but I'm not angry. I'm just frustrated.
I'm disappointed.
That's the best. It's just disappointing. I love this hobby. I've spent so much money on it. I mean, the used games market, the used game market is way more complicated. They're just like, we're missing out on sales. And there's no proof of that. There's no proof of that. Here's the thing. I buy used games, but I also buy a fuck ton of new games. And sometimes me buying used games leads me to buying new games. Like, I bought Yakuza 1 and 2 used because I got into the series after it started. I couldn't buy them new even if I wanted to. I bought those used for, like, $10 a pop. And now I buy the games when I go to the other side of the world because they didn't come out here. Like, that's how much I love Yakuza now. I buy all the games new. I got the games that only came out in Japan. But I wouldn't. I can't say I would have done that if I wasn't able to buy 1 and 2 used and cheap, like I did. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Even if I don't, like, even if I buy a used game and I don't get necessarily into the series or anything else from the publisher or whatever, which probably doesn't usually happen. Usually, I do buy a lot of stuff from multiple publishers, but they're discounting. You know, the modern era where we have a lot of people like us, for instance, who have these voices who impact the purchasing decisions of what maybe 7 people. But I mean, there's a lot of people on YouTube, on Twitter that have podcasts. You know, the social media where they have an audience, and you know, if they don't get their games for cheap and say, "Oh, I picked up this game on a whim at GameStop. It was only like $7. It was great," and then they could potentially turn other people on to that game, that series, that publisher. And that, you know, like, so I think used games are, that whole market is way more complicated than these publishers think, and I think they're shooting themselves in the fucking foot for short-term games, and they have no concept of the long-term on this.
Yeah. You know, it seems to me that their biggest issue is, you know, they want to get their biggest sales up front, you know, the first 3 months or what have you.
Right.
And it sucks that GameStop will turn around and sell, you know, a used copy of BioShock Infinite or whatever for $55 when the new version is $60. And some people will pay that. But, you know, those used versions wouldn't exist if a person didn't already buy it new. And maybe people won't buy it new if they don't know they can sell it, you know? It's used games, for a lot of people, it seems to me, would be funding new games. So
that's true. GameStop has said that a number of people who trade in games, like probably the majority of people who trade in used games, buy new games.
Yeah, exactly.
70% of the turnaround is going to.
Is that what the number was?
I think so.
Yeah, the market's way more complicated than they give it credit for. And another thing that kills me about all these rules, especially when the fact that they differ from game, they could not only differ from publisher to publisher, publishers could hypothetically differ them from game to game. So it reminds me of Microsoft's obfuscation with their Microsoft points, where like 80 points equals a dollar, which is not even at all. So they're purposely making these things complicated so that consumers who aren't as well educated on these matters get locked into bullshit that they don't want to get locked into. And that's what's going to happen. Because up until now, you buy a game at the store, you pop it in, you loan it to a friend, you trade it in. It was super simple. And now you can't do any of that. Or you can do it sometimes in some ways, but maybe you got to pay extra money. It's stupid. No one's going to understand this.
I feel like there's going to be a lot of pissed off parents.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely.
Do we know if you're still going to have to pay to play online on Xbox One?
They haven't said anything.
They have not said no.
That'll be the biggest fucking bullshit ever if that is the case.
Absolutely. I haven't complained about paying for Xbox Live because when you get it on sale, it's so easy to get those cards on sale. I mean, it's not even a thing. You get those cards on sale, you're really paying like $3 a month. And
yeah,
they really go down
to like $35 for a year pretty often.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I really do prefer how that service functions over PSN. PSN's free, but it's not as well-rounded. Like, I could be playing Halo, and I can send an invite to a friend, and when they get that invite, the invite's, like, dynamic. Like, they just click on a button and say, join game. Or you can, you know, join game right from the dashboard. With PSN, you can't do that. You have to both be in the game, and every game obviously has different menus. It's not a system-wide thing. And so I don't mind paying $3 a month to get the kind of convenience that Live is offered. But if you're going to charge me to play online and have all these stupid fucking restrictions on me and require me to be online, I'll be like, you can fuck right the hell off.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Sony's been numb, you know, on this matter. And the thing is, like, they may not be as draconian. You know, who knows? This is pretty rough. But if I had to guess, they're probably going to at least leave it up to publishers how they want to handle used games and authentication, if nothing else.
If that's the case, hopefully only the shitty publishers like EA and Activision
right.
use this. Yeah. I mean,
there's so many publishers, and so there's going to be so many rules, but I sort of feel like the bigger publishers are the ones I don't buy that many games from anyway.
Right. Same. Like, so, if XSEED started doing this, I'd be like, no, XSEED, why?
Yeah. So I would actually be surprised if PS4 didn't have, maybe not the same rules, but certainly some similar limitations. Because EA unilaterally dropped their online passes. So that would suggest to me, and they're not developing for Wii U, where we know that they don't have these kinds of used or loaned game protections. They're not developing games for that. So that, to me, would suggest that PS4 probably has something like this.
I'm pretty sure when, right after the PS4 announcement and all that, Sony said that an online connection would not be required for PS4. So, I mean, already that limits a lot of the what you could do with DRM, I think.
Mm. But I mean, there could be an asterisk there for, they could be like, this is not required for Sony games. It's not, you know, it's not required for, but I mean, it might be required for authentication checks. For
we don't know technically what that means. I mean, Microsoft has said, you know, you're not required to be online at all times.
Right. That's so, what they said. With, like, of course, the asterisk is not all times, but
just once every day.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was like, not online's not needed at all ever.
Okay.
I think you're right, but I don't think we know that for sure.
Yeah, it's not. You gotta really have to wait for official confirmation.
Yeah.
I know, I'm just not a fan of this route, and it just makes me feel better about, you know, all the handheld gaming I'm doing. Like, right now, like, I don't think people understand. People seem to think that, like, the generation starts when Microsoft and Sony release their TV consoles. But out of the five, like, mainstream systems that, you know, make up a generation, we already have three of them. And they let you just put in games and play them. So, mm-hmm. you know, get a 3DS, get a Vita, get a Wii U, and just fucking play games. Like, that's all I want. I just want to play games with the least amount of resistance possible. And right now I can do that on the 3DS, I can do that mostly on the Vita, and I can do that mostly on the Wii U. The Wii U just needs games that don't offer resistance. But this is just not heading in the direction I am at all happy with, and I think it's going to be harmful to the industry and harmful to this hobby, and it's not cool.
It is not cool.
So I guess that wraps it. Do you guys have anything you'd like to add about this?
No. I just really hope that this. I just hope this backfires on Microsoft, because I want to continue gaming the way I've been gaming for years.
Sucks is, like, I'm going to be absolutely candid. If Rare comes out with a new, like, Banjo platformer, a new Perfect Dark, a new Viva Pinata, and Fable 4 is in the works, like, man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to resist. Because at the end of the day, I just want to play those games, man. And it sucks. It sucks I'm going to have to buy easily into something that I hate. But that I'm not interested in. But man, like, especially Fable 4, it's going to be rough.
I would not fold. Literally, if Shenmue 3 came out on Xbox One, I still wouldn't buy it.
Wow! That is some fortitude right there. I'm impressed.
Yep. Taking a stand, man.
That is good. Nah, I just... The problem is I just love games. I just love playing games. And I'm going to want to... Like, I love Fable. Like, there's no... You know, there's not very much out there like Fable, which I'm sure many people are going, thank fucking God for that. But for me, I love it. It's totally up my alley. And to think that I won't be able to play Fable 4 is very disappointing to me. Actually, on the subject of Fable, there's a Fable anniversary coming out this fall for 360, which is an HD re-release of the first Fable with some cleanups. Hopefully they improve the frame rate, because Fables tend to have shitty frame rates and terrible interfaces. And my understanding is they are cleaning up the interface at the very least, so that's coming out. News within news, yo dog. Do you guys want to move on to something else?
Sure.
All right.
Let's do it.
So the last thing I want to talk about is not really news, and it's not really beefy enough to be a topic, but I want to talk about, like, expectations that we might have as personalities in gaming. This is in particular related to The Last of Us, which is getting rave reviews and is coming out very shortly at the time of this recording. I have no interest in The Last of Us. And I feel like I have to constantly... And I'm not... It's not saying it looks like a bad... Honestly, it just looks like a more somber Uncharted with no platforming. That's what it looks like to me. And I have no interest. It doesn't look compelling at all to me. That's not to say it looks bad. Just don't care. And I feel like constantly I have to justify it. Constantly people are asking me, are you getting The Last of Us? Are you excited for The Last of Us? You see all these reviews? And I go to GameStop and, like, I got, like, Project Cross Zone and Animal Crossing pre-ordered. Yo, did you see Last of Us? Yep, saw it. I don't care, and I feel like I constantly have to justify this, and it feels like there's, like, expectations on us to play particular games, and I used to do that. I used to buy, oh, yeah, I'm really expecting to play this, I'll check it out, and then, like, and I'm just, as I understand my own taste, like, more and more, I just look at that game and I go, that looks boring. And I know that that's, you know, at some point Joel's going to be like, you're going to get us killed. And then you're going to be stuck in a shooting arena with mushroom men. And you know what's going to happen in that game. And I just don't care. It looks boring. And, but people expect me to play it. And, I mean, what do you guys, I mean, have you guys been asked at all about this?
I have not been asked at all. No, not at all.
Nobody cares. Do you feel like there's any social pressure to play particular games?
Yes, but I, like, ignored that a while ago.
Yeah, you're pretty good at that. You're not as connected. Because of all the content I make, like, I kind of, like, want to check up on how my content's being consumed, and I want to answer questions people have for me, so I'm very constantly connected, so I'm also very constantly bombarded by things that aren't that stuff, whether it's negativity or people ask me, you playing this game? Or, like, I'll do a collection video. I do them every month. I talk about the games I picked up, and I put some effort into them. They're basically, like, mini reviews for all these games. And then this is some jackass will watch this half-hour video and be like, what, no Call of Duty? No, motherfucker, you want to go through that video again and find it? Because it ain't in there. You can try. Did you see it? No? Okay, then no Call of Duty. Thanks for wasting my fucking time. And I hate that. I hate that, like, there's, like, an expectation that I have to buy or play particular games because either A, it's so popular and you got to play it, or B, that's what your particular tastes dictate. I hate that. And I used to, like, when Call of Duty's come out, like, I wish I liked Call of Duty. I mean, I don't know if you guys feel that way. Like, you wished you liked something you didn't, but I wished I liked it because so many people play it and so many people like it and they're so into it. There's a huge social, people talking about it on Twitter, and there's such a huge social thing when it comes to Call of Duty that I wish I liked it so I could be part of that socialization. And I just can't. Do you guys ever wish you were part of that?
Yeah, like, especially, like, a lot of times on the boards I post on, I see a lot of people just talking about a new game that just came out and everybody's playing it, and I wish I could get in on that, but I just don't want to play that game. It's not something I'm interested in.
Yeah.
It's usually... It's usually Call of Duty, but even, like, SimCity and stuff like that.
Or Assassin's Creed, or... Yeah, usually these big games, and a lot of the big games just don't interest me because... Every single time, especially with The Last of Us, like, every single time I feel like I'm like, this is a super important game and you got to play it, I look, and then either I look at it or I do actually play it, because I'll probably play The Last of Us, it'll probably come out with a Game of the Year edition for $30 with all the DLC, and I'll maybe pick it up then, but I'm looking at this game, and I'm looking at videos of this game, and I'm like, this looks like the same old hat, but it's Malibu Stacy, but she's got a new hat, and that's what I feel like this is, like, this doesn't look that revolutionary, I'm sorry. They talk nice and the graphics are great, but the gameplay looks like the same clunky gunplay that Uncharted had. I feel like every single time I'm told this is a great game and you got to play it, it's just the same old shit. And I want to be in it so badly, but I'm just not.
I don't even know how it, like, plays. I'm just fucking burnt out on post-apocalyptic zombie shit.
Right, yeah. Oh, they're not zombies, it's mushrooms. No, it's fucking zombies, dude.
They're zombies. Zombies with a freaking jock infection.
It's from what I have seen, it looks very much like Uncharted, but you can't take that many hits. There's more stealth involved. I mean, Uncharted already had stealth segments, but there's more stealth involved in this. There's like not a whole lot of platforming going on. So it's maybe more of a survival-ish kind of Uncharted. But there's still gunplay. Like, I was reading Chris Kohler from Wired's Game Life wrote about it, and he said, like, he snuck through this area, and he felt great, and he got to the end, and there was a locked door, because the game expected him to turn into an arena battle and shoot all these dudes. And it's a game about the brutality and tough decisions you gotta make in this post-apocalyptic world, but then it turns into, you know, a shooting gallery like Uncharted was. And it seems like, well, it sounds like your message is lost, dude. Especially when you tack on multiplayer, like... Oh, such tough decisions to make in single player, but check all of these sweet guns and tropes in multiplayer, motherfucker.
The multiplayer look, I've mentioned this briefly, but it looks like gross to me. Like, it's because the kills and everything are very realistic and brutal, and just like the concept of people going, hey, let's get together, pretend to like just beat each other,
brutally murdering one another.
Yes, it's so. It's disturbing to me. I don't know why.
Here's
it's kind of fucked up that people get fun out of that.
Yeah. Here's the way this would work to me thematically. If kills were always optional in the single player, kills were always optional and reserved. I mean, you get 10 upgradable guns in the single player. I don't think they're considering that the last option. It's clear guns are a big part of the game. But if you want this really brutal, visceral violence and you want it to make an impact... Like, make it so I only have to kill, like, 3 dudes in the whole game, you know? And then don't put it in multiplayer, because when you put it in multiplayer and killing is a big part of that, to me, you're just... You're no longer trying to make a statement about violence. You're now glorifying it.
Yeah, it's two completely different things. One is, in the single player, you're trying to make a statement by being disturbed by the killing. Multiplayer, the sole focus is to get together and have fun killing each other.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a mixed message. I think even the single player is a mixed message in terms of like, oh, killing's, you know, last resort option, except for these arenas where we have to kill a bunch of dudes before the door opens. So I think even the single player is its own mixed message. But yeah, when you hold the multiplayer and single player up next to each other, they don't drive at all. And we're making all these commentaries without playing the game, to be fair, you know, like that is to be absolutely fair, but I mean, these are things... I don't feel like I have to play the game to know that there's a discrepancy between the single-player and multiplayer. I mean, that is
clear. I think that's pretty clear, yeah.
And from what I have seen of the game, I don't think I need to go out and spend $60 and go, nope, this game isn't for me. I pretty much... After playing literally thousands of games in my life, I know my taste pretty well. And from what I've seen of this game, I'm just not that interested. I will give it a shot eventually, but now is not that time. Are there any games, I mean, to get more into the more general topic here, I mean, are there any games where you guys do actually get into the social aspect? Because I know for me, I get into Pokemon, and every Pokemon game, clearly I bitch very loudly about it, but I can't help it because there's still something about Pokemon I still really do love, and there aren't really any games that do what Pokemon does so well, despite Pokemon's myriad problems. And then you got people posting on Twitter, oh, I just caught this motherfucker, I caught this asshole, and you're like, man, this is great. And so for me, Pokemon, I really do actually get swept up in that. Are there any games where you guys do actually get caught up in the wave?
I'm trying to think here. I want to say no.
I can't think of anything specific, but I mean, that's a big part of why I pick up some of the games I do. Like, I know... You know, earlier this year we talked about Ni No Kuni, and I picked that up because people were talking about it. I mean, beyond that, it definitely sounded like something I was interested in, and I do enjoy it, but it was partly that, you know, people were talking about, you know, oh, I just got to this area, and it's so cool, you know? And it seems to me that happens with a few games, but there's not a specific one that I can point to.
And not, like, any big ones for me. Like, I've been, like, sort of hyping up the new Sonic game a lot, but that's not, like, a big release or anything, you know?
Right. Yeah, there's a bit of a difference between, like, Ni No Kuni or the Sonic game, which does look good, by the way. No one's telling you these are super important games and you don't... Like to me, like, that feels like that's where the difference is, where word of mouth and socialization is a bit different because... No one is, like, thinking, like, what do you mean you haven't played Sonic Lost World? No one's saying that. No one's going to say that. But they're going to say that about The Last of Us, and I just look at it and I go, why, though? And even the people that are, like, salivating over this game have not been able to tell me. They're like, well, because it's Naughty Dog. Or, like, you know, whatever. Like, and that's fine. That's fine that you're looking forward to it. I don't want to take that away from you. I absolutely do not. But I look at it and I go, I mean, even Naughty Dog in general really hasn't made that many games that really have impressed me. Crash Bandicoot always struck me as an also-ran. I really only liked one of the four Uncharteds. And the first Jak game was the best Jak game, and the other ones were just trying to cash in on open world violent nonsense. You know, I mean, even as a developer, Naughty Dog doesn't always impress me. Like, that, even that's not enough.
Yeah, I'm interested in The Last of Us because I do enjoy the Uncharted games. And then, you know, I saw it was getting all these glowing reviews, and that definitely piqued my interest. But, you know, I saw Uncharted 3 get a couple of 10s, and I thought that was a pretty big step down from Uncharted 2. So I don't think I'm going to be picking up The Last of Us right away, despite my, you know, somewhat interest in it.
That's another thing, too, especially with these big games. I mean, it's sort of like a tangent subject here, is that, you know, it feels like there's an echo chamber with the reviews, and I review games, and I don't want anyone to look at me and think that there's some ulterior motive or that I'm mistaken or anything like that when I review games. So I don't want to do it to other people, but I always feel like when these things happen, I look at it and I go, okay, so this game is basically really pretty, and it doesn't like make anyone uncomfortable. It doesn't do anything remarkable, and that's what I feel like when I see these kind of rave reviews. It doesn't suggest to me that the game is great. It just it suggests to me that it's a really polished, you know, well-worn formula.
I sort of feel like a lot of reviewers are desperate to find that one game that they could compare to cinema or movies or something, like that one game that stands out to just prove that video games are on that same level. And then they sort of get swept up in the whole thing. I think it happened with GTA 4 and IGN's whole Oscar-worthy script. I think it happened with Metal Gear Solid 4. And I'm not saying it's happening again here. I don't know why.
It has. There was someone who said, like, this is the Citizen Kane.
I feel like there's a desperate need to try to find that one game, and just reviewers get swept up in something that might be okay or good, and then they overblow it. They hype it up too much because they so desperately want it to be on that same level as movies.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Like, I do think there's a desperate need to assert this hobby, this medium is important. So they hype up these games, and maybe they really do feel that way. Like, maybe the problem is, like, it's not that the reviewers are wrong. It's just that they so desperately want it to be great that they get swept up in the game. And then when that dies down, when that excitement dies down, you sort of look at the game and go, well, actually, this is pretty good, but maybe it wasn't worth all that hyperbole, you know?
Right.
And I think that's what actually happens. It's not necessarily dishonest. I'm sure they actually feel that way while they're playing it, but mm-hmm. it's removed from context. It's just like they just get so swept into it.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably true.
And I think the most realistic opinions on the game are going to come like a month or two, just from message boards and Twitter and stuff like
right.
that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, look at BioShock Infinite. You know, that was getting great reviews at first, and then people were. And then it seems so like the opinions changed maybe a month later.
Yeah.
And I fear that might happen with this too. So I'm certainly going to wait a little while and see what people think down the line a little bit.
On the subject of trying to compare it to Citizen Kane, I think it's very telling that we're always trying to compare it to, you know, this really highly regarded film. Because it's not just like a loose comparison. We're not saying like that we're trying to find a very important game. Because otherwise we'd be saying something like, oh, well, we are... You know, we're looking for the Of Mice and Men of gaming, or the Abbey Road of gaming. Like, no one says that. No one compares it to books or music. It's always film, because it just feels like that's what so many games, like, want to be. And I think that's a very telling part of the industry where, you know, we're not saying we're looking for a game that's held on the level of these other great things in other mediums. We're looking specifically for something that compares to a film.
And I said we should be finding something that just exemplifies what gaming is all about.
Interactivity. No, I'm right there with you. I actually absolutely agree with that, but that's not how a lot of people see it.
I liked Peter on Twitter said that Citizen Kane is the Super Mario World of cinema.
It's a good way of looking at it. I mean, I don't want to rag on Last of Us too much. This is more about, you know, expectations and, you know, social pressure and how we play games. Not necessarily with each other, but, like, at the same time as other people. But Last of Us just happened to be the catalyst for that for me, because, like, I'm just looking at it and I go, I don't know, dudes. I think you're getting a little carried away, but, you know, maybe it is a great game. I haven't played it, but it doesn't look that
remarkable. I just remember the last game I got super swept up in a social aspect was Virtue's Last Reward.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
That's a good point.
But I mean, there was two things there. One, that's already obviously to your taste, and two, it's yep. not this marketing juggernaut that The Last of Us is either.
Double yep. I just don't feel the pressure to get into those big games.
Yeah.
And I know you're more of a public figure, Craig, so.
What's that?
I said I know you're more of a public figure, Craig, so
I understand
that it's hitting you more often.
Yeah, no, that is true.
Yeah.
But that said, that's the news and topics we have. We can move into the mailbag now. And if any listener wants to get involved in the mailbag, and we really hope you do, you can go to tvless.net. There's a big banner at the top, a mailbag. You can click on it, and then you can leave a comment for us, and we'll read on the air. It could be game-related. Most of them are, but it could be anything you'd like. First up, we have Nathan. And Nathan says, if you could revive any old franchise, one that hasn't seen a new entry in at least 10 years, what would it be and why? And he says he's going to go with Star Tropics. I think it has massive potential to be revived. He says they even take an HD remake at this point. I mean, Star Tropics is a good one. A lot of people cite that. Because it could really... I mean, it's a very action-y Zelda with crappy jump controls. so I feel like that there is definitely some potential there with Star Tropics.
Yep.
Yeah, Star Tropics would be my pick. I didn't actually play that until, you know, a couple of years ago, but... I like it a lot, and I think, you know, a revival, you know, with, you know, modern controls and modern standards would be pretty interesting, depending on how they handled it. You know, I wouldn't know what to expect to do with something like Kid Icarus Uprising. It's obviously completely different from the original game, but I'd definitely be interested to see what they do with it, if it happens, which it won't.
Yeah, right.
I think Phantasy Star, like a non-Phantasy Star Online, just like a old school RPG.
Would you want it to still be like a first person dungeon crawler?
I'd be fine with it. Yeah.
I could see that happening on a handheld. I can see. I would. I think that'd be pretty cool. I mean, I don't know how into it I'd be, but I like the idea at least.
Yeah.
Oh, the bandwidth just dropped somewhere or something. You guys are sounding like you're on a telephone now.
Does it sound like I'm on old time radio?
Kind of, yeah. which I think it just got better there. That's good.
Okay.
And he also asked, secondly, if you could kill off any current franchise, which one would you kill off and why? And he suggests Call of Duty. He feels like it's just hindered creativity coming out of the industry. You know, I'm gonna go. You know what? I'm gonna say I want to kill off anything. I mean, I understand what he's saying with Call of Duty here, and it is frustrating. Where like. Call of Duty seemed, I mean, a ton of people love it, right? But it also seems to exemplify at the same time, you know, the lack of creativity, the annual sequels, the sort of turning games into a service, and things like that. But at the same time, you know, I'm still getting games that I really enjoy. So for me to say, like, I'm going to kill off something else that someone else enjoys, I feel like that's like one of those meatheads who says, like, JRPGs suck and we shouldn't get any more. Well, fuck you, asshole. I like JRPGs, right? So... I'm gonna say I'm not gonna kill anything.
I feel like if you kill off Call of Duty, something else would just take up the mantle anyway.
That's probably
true. That's how I feel too. You know, like if you look back at the Super Nintendo, there were a lot of, you know, mascot platformers or whatever. I feel like if we killed off Call of Duty, something would just pop up to replace it.
Yeah. Yep. And yeah. He invites us to keep up the awesome, which we will certainly try.
Sabotage this shit.
Right. From the inside out. The next one comes from someone named Ruthless Puffin, which is fantastic. Just a picture of Ruthless Puffin. I love it. He says he's been playing Ghost Hunter on the PS2, and he wonders if any of us have played it. He says he's enjoying the game. He finds aiming a little difficult, but he likes it. I've wanted to actually get this game. It's been like something I'll check out on like eBay, and like all these auctions are shit or whatever, but and I've never seen it at GameStop. It's actually been one I wanted to check out, but I have not.
That's Namco, right? I have that game.
I am fairly certain that is Namco, yes. Yep.
Yeah, I actually, this was like the first review copy of a game I got.
Is this Game Baboons?
Yeah, when I was writing for some really shitty website. I wasn't that. Well, it was pretty shitty, but I'm pretty sure like the whole aim of the website was just to get into some E3. Of us into
E3. Yeah, yeah.
And by the time that this review copy like actually came to me, like Game Baboons was no more. And I remember like a week after I got it, like Namco called me and they're like, yeah, so that review. I was like, huh. I told them that I was going to do it for some other site that never went anywhere. But they stopped bothering me, whatever.
That's you know what's funny is that they called, like, I have never had any follow-ups about reviews, like, ever. No one's ever followed up with me. Like, whatever, fucking review the game, we don't care, get the fuck out of our face.
I was probably blacklisted that day.
that's okay, because I do have contacts for Namco Bandai, so whatever.
Yeah, no, I played through the, I guess the first level, which is in modern times, and it's badass. I love it. I love it. But then right after that, you get, like, warped back into, like, time or something, and then I just didn't care anymore. But I really liked what I did play of it, because it's just, it's, like, really fast. It's like if Ghostbusters was, like, a ninja shooter. You shoot ghosts, you throw your trap on them, they get sucked in, like, the trap comes flying back to you in your hand, you catch it like a boomerang or something, and strap it back on your belt. It's cool.
All right, I'm going to buy this game.
I had never even heard of this game, so...
I think it's PS2 only, too. It sucks, because I prefer playing last-gen shooters on the Xbox, but... What can you do?
Oh, well.
Next up, we have Nick Neck. And he says he's new at giving feedback, so that's great. We got some fresh blood. He's been listening to the podcast since near the end of 2011, and he's currently catching up. I think now is a good time for me to ask you guys some questions for the upcoming episodes. Anyway, enough of the banter. Here's what I want to ask you guys. Assuming if it will be released and you guys know about it, do you think the Steam box is going to dominate this / next generation and put the so-called big three to shame, including Nintendo? No. No, because I wonder who the Steam box is for. I have no idea. I have no idea. That seems like a weird market there.
I mean, everybody has a computer already.
Right, and of course, the PC Master Race is going to be like, Steam box? Wow.
Yeah, those specs aren't up to my Radeon A680.
Right. And I can't imagine it'll be cheap. So, I mean, there goes the mass market. So I don't know who it's for. So no, I don't think it'll dominate, and I don't think it'll put anyone to shame. No, absolutely not. My TV has a port. Like I could, if I really wanted to hook up my computer to my TV, I could.
So I have.
Yeah,
I've actually played. Yeah, I've played a Steam. What it was, Jamestown, because my friend came over and we wanted
and
to play
co-op. Yeah,
just
put in big picture or whatever. Like yeah, you'd be fine. It's fine. It's good. So nah, I don't agree. I shouldn't say agree because he didn't assert anything, but I don't think it will. Also, if it's no problem with you guys, I want to ask you one more thing, and that is, who do you think is going to win between the Spurs and the Heat? That's just gibberish, dude. I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's basketball, Craig.
I'm fairly certain that is basketball. It's not complete gibberish. Right, right. Nah, I don't know. I don't, the Heat.
Aren't the Heat, like, in Florida? Florida's awful, so the Spurs, I guess.
Are the Spurs San Antonio? Is that right?
He's on Wikipedia. He's like, I'm pretty sure this is...
No, that is the one that I think I can name where they're from, so I'm going to go with that.
I think it's Miami Heat. I think it's Miami Heat.
Miami Heat, yes. No,
I think you're right. That does sound right.
But I don't know where the Spurs are from. I can't now. No.
The San Antonio Spurs is...
It makes sense. I mean, the Spurs is probably from some fucking...
It's probably Texas.
Yep, San Antonio Spurs. I have no idea how I knew that.
Alright. Yeah, they're going to win the Spurs.
And in other news, Craig just offended every Hick State ever. He says he's loving the podcast, on to 100 plus and even more episodes. We'll get there. James asks what our favorite Nintendo IP is. That isn't Mario, Zelda, Metroid, or Clue Clue Land.
Damn, I was going to say Clue Clue Land.
Balloon Fight? Like, I'm going to go Balloon Fight right now. Actually, Balloon Fight's a lot of fun multiplayer, but he says he's going to go for Rhythm Heaven and Fire Emblem. And I guess... You know, without much thought, because I'm not... If I put some thought into it, my answer might be different, but I guess I'll go to Star Fox.
Ooh, Star Fox is good.
It's a good one.
I'm going to go left field and go Owndon.
What?
Owndon?
What is that?
Elite Beat Agents?
Oh, okay.
Does Professor Layton count? I know that's technically level 5.
But it's published by Nintendo, right?
Only in the U.S.
It counts. Nintendo publishes
it. It doesn't count. It counts. It's not one of their IPs. They don't own it. They can't do whatever they want with it.
Well, I got nothing then.
Okay. I like how Seth supersedes me.
Fuck you. I'm saying Layton anyway.
Okay.
No, I'm not. Whatever.
Shut up. You've been outvoted. It's 2-1 Mexican, so you just lose. Then we have Jippy, and he says, Salut. What is that? I'm not...
Lagarce?
My French is not very strong.
Well, let's see. Garçon is like a waiter, so wouldn't Garce be like...
Boys, maybe? I don't know. My French is... I took 3 years of it. You'd think I'd know more than I do, but I don't. And Seth. Do you think Super Mario 64 has aged well? Keep it going, guys. You're my favorite video game podcast. Wow, that's some high praise. I think it has aged well. I mean, there are some things with it, like the camera. Some of the controls aren't, you know, they're not Mario Galaxy smooth. But remarkably, a lot of, like, the level design and the goals and stuff, I think, actually have held up really well.
I think it's one of the N64 games that's aged the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think it's absolutely aged well.
Yeah.
I think it's clear it's not a modern game, but it's still very much more playable than a lot of games of that era.
Right. I mean, that's all I was trying to point out. I wasn't trying to harp on it.
Honestly, I think you could, like, remake this game, just fancy up the graphics, tweak the controls a little bit, and you could resell it.
Yeah, you probably could, yeah. Then we have David. David says he recently came across New Super Mario Bros. 2 on sale for $20 at Future Shop, which is a pretty good deal. He says he's never been a fan of the new Super Mario Bros. Games, but he's enjoying this one, despite the fact that it's supposedly a weaker entry in the series. He says, do you have any similar experiences with any other series or games? I might even be in the same shoes as him. I think New Super Mario Bros. 2 is actually my favorite one in the series, and I thought the first one was definitely weak. I don't care for the first one. I thought the Wii one was pretty good. But, yeah, I mean, everyone's like, oh, I'm so tired of these dudes.
Super Mario Bros. 2 blew me away. Yeah. I loved it so much after so many people were complaining about it, and I thought it was fantastic.
I loved it. I mean, at first I was like, yeah, this is pretty good. But then once the level design starts opening up, like, it's actually a lot of fun. And it just seems so weird that, like, we've had 4 of these games in 6 years, and they're like, I'm so burnt out. And I thought it was great. I loved that game. It was a lot of fun.
I'm going to say I like Phantom Hourglass. Everybody hates that game, gross. But I like
it. I like Spirit Tracks.
I don't even like Spirit Tracks, but I like Phantom Hourglass.
I like Spirit Tracks a lot, actually. Phantom Hourglass was okay. I like Spirit Tracks, like, a lot. Nobody likes those games, though. Nope. But I like both of them.
That's true.
And he says, any of you looking to pick up the new Sonic game on either Wii or 3DS? It's looking pretty damn good from what I've seen. Anyways, keep up the good work. I intend to pick up both because I think they both look good.
I love that Sonic does not run ridiculously stupidly fast anymore.
Right, because there is speed, but that's, you know, it's a trademark Sonic the Hedgehog thing, so that's great. But it's not so fast that, like, it you can't have platforming in there, because when he runs too fast, he just goes on autopilot. You don't have no time to react. You can't have platforming in that.
Even a lot of, like, God, what's the game with the Werehog?
Unleashed.
I played, like, the demo of that, the daytime level. Even the 2D sections of that game were too fucking fast. Like, it just wasn't conducive to platforming. It's just running. It's just running and trying to, like, get on the right track to run some more and run and run and run. And this one, there's, like, areas to, like, explore and jump off to and all this other stuff. Like, just looking at that video that IGN posted up, like, there's so many places I just want to, like, run off to and jump up and, like, explore around. Yeah. Instead of just like, hey, I want to run through this level as fast as possible.
It looks really good. And it looks like they're Nintendo's not just paying for it. They're probably getting guidance from Nintendo on this as well.
You think?
Yes.
I think so.
And I think it's cool that the 3DS version actually looks a lot like the Wii U version. Apparently it's different. I've read that there are different level designs to take advantage of, you know, the different hardware and the different screen size and things like that. but the gameplay, like, mechanics are similar. So I think that's cool that you get a similar game, but it's actually completely different.
I'm still worried about how Sonic's going to control, like, in the 2D segments, because I just hated the way he controlled in everything. It's Sonic 4, Sonic Colors, Sonic Generations. It just doesn't, like, feel right on the 2D areas. I think I'm still going to hate that.
We'll see how it goes.
But the 3D areas look good.
Nice. Noah says that he got some great gaming deals this week, including Super Mario All-Stars and NBA Jam Boxed and Complete for 25 cents each.
What?
That's crazy.
That's bananas. Super Mario World and lots of other great NES games for $1 altogether. And this motherfucker doesn't be like, get up on Twitter like, hey, you guys want anything? Some fan you are, Noah.
What a dick.
He says, what's
delete this comment now.
What's the greatest gaming deal you guys have found? I think for me it sells at $7 for Guardian Heroes.
I think I mentioned this. It's my $10 I paid for Earthbound.
That's incredible. Fuck off.
I am still looking for that greatest gaming deal, but I paid like $2 for a brand new copy of Metal Gear Solid and like maybe 5 years ago.
That's not too bad.
Blockbuster happened to have one. It's greatest hits, but...
I was going to say, it's a neon green spot.
Yeah, it's that one. I have an open copy of the Black Label, but...
Oh, that works. I mean, that's okay, then. I think, like, that's not too bad for, like, collecting purposes.
Yeah. I mean, it was $2. I'll pick it up for that.
Dictator Azam says... He says the PS4 is going to cost $350. Do you guys think this is a real price point?
I need to interrupt really fast.
There's a lot.
Here's the thing, Seth.
Speaking of these gaming deals, you could still get Vegas Stakes brand new for Super Nintendo on eBay for $1.
Right, because there's so many of those.
There's like one of them is a sealed box of the games. Like, yep. Just like a shipment box full of Vegas Stakes. It's so funny to me.
F-Zero is a lot like that, too. You can get that brand new for like nothing, for like, like $10, $20.
Because
there's so many of those. Anyway, the price point that Azam is citing, about $350 for the PS4, is analyst speculation, which are never right. So,
yeah, I think Pactor said this, so it's probably Pactor, $200 more.
When is he ever correct? So, he said I wouldn't be surprised if it is, since PS4 costs Sony $250 to make. I don't know where that price point comes from.
I think that's like the parts that make it up, but then that never like counts in manufacturing and R&D and R&D, shipping,
yeah,
and all that
marketing. Yeah, you can say this costs $250 in raw materials, but that's zero overhead. So, it's probably, you know, I think $400 is probably a good estimation for both systems. I would be interested in seeing the subsidized, like the speculation that there could be a subsidized console, that could be interesting. I think it's better than having a separate SKU with, like, you know, the Babby hard drive or whatever. So, you have to pay for PSN or you have to pay for Live for a year or two or whatever, and you get a cheaper console. I think that's a lot more interesting than, like, here's your gimped piece of crap. I see people with old Xbox 360s without that chrome disc drive, and I'm like, you got a crappy Xbox.
Is there non-chrome hard drive or disc drives?
The GIMP model does not have chrome finish. That was one of the things about it.
Ooh.
Wired controllers, no chrome finish. And I don't think I had a hard drive either. I had to use memory cards. That's a thing. I don't think anyone remembers. The Xbox 360 uses memory cards, everyone.
I have one just so I could bring my profile to friends' houses. Memory card.
That's not a bad idea. Matt456P says that he's been thinking a lot about video game critique lately, and this hypothetical especially is making me queasy. Let's say game A is a compilation of three original mini-games. When the game is booted up, the player can choose to play whichever one he wants. One of the mini-games is very good, the other two are very bad. The game is $30. Game B is the one good mini-game as its own game, and it's $1. But wait, we just paid $30. I don't understand why it's $1.
Because it doesn't come with the other two games?
I thought he just said it comes with three mini-games.
No. Game A is a compilation.
Oh, Game
of three
B is a separate
mini.
Game. Okay, so Game B is that one mini game separately at, for a dollar.
Yeah.
Which game should get a more positive review? I don't think cost factors into this. I've had this discussion with other people. I used to believe that cost was important, but I don't believe that cost is a factor anymore because that $30 game is going to be that $20 game, that $15, that $10 game. And then if you hinge your review on how much it costs, your review is fucking worthless as soon as that price goes down. Your review could be worthless on day one if the reader has, like, a gift certificate and money's not as much of a concern. Or maybe he makes $70,000 a year, $80,000, $100,000, and, like, it's not that big of a deal to him how much a game costs. Hinging things on price is just not that good.
Especially in this industry with how quickly prices do drop.
Yes. Yeah, I don't think it's that good. Your review becomes worthless under so many factors, so I don't think it's important. It could be worth noting, but you really shouldn't hang your review on it.
This was actually a trick question. Since they're mini games, none of them are worth buying.
But where would you get this game for, like, a dollar, like iOS? Because, I mean, then you have to ask yourself, okay, like, where on Game A, was it on a console? Is it better play with controls? Or, you know, does it suck playing Game B on iOS on the touchscreen? Or, you know, I think there are some unknown factors in there that we, you know, that would impact this, I think. Because you're not going to download any mini games on, like, Xbox Live Arcade for a dollar. I don't think they go that low. He says, which game should get a more positive review? Do the prices matter? I don't think that they do, and I explain that. I don't really have a definitive opinion of my own, so I was wondering what you guys thought. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think that's really up to the consumer. It's really tough to say in a review. My review would basically be like, here's this compilation. I would probably pretty much review it mostly on its own merits. You know, like, oh, here, there's this great game within this compilation. The other two you could possibly ignore. And, you know, obviously as a consumer, though, Game B is a better value. So, you know, I think that's really more – it's really tough to say as a critic where that would go. I think I would review Game B quite well and Game A not as well. But the prices wouldn't factor into that. I would probably criticize Game A for having bloat, for having two lousy games that are unnecessary.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that Game B would probably get a better review as the entire package is better overall. But, I mean, it depends on how good that mini game in Game A is. You know, you could say, well, it's worth picking up because this one mini game is amazing. You know, you can just ignore the other two. But if it's, you know, well, this is pretty good, but, you know, there's a bunch of crap in here too, it's probably not worth it. It overall, I'd say Game B is probably going to get better reviewed, but it's hard to say with just a hypothetical game. You know?
Right.
I feel like we're talking about a monkey ball game here.
I know.
We are.
Right. Aaron says that he's been playing 999. He just hit the first ending, the knife one. And he's asking you two, remember when Junpei realizes that he knows who would benefit most from the number 8? I can't figure out who he meant unless it's a spoiler and will be revealed later on. Could you tell me?
I have no idea.
I don't remember.
Ace, snake, I don't know.
Also, is there anything I should know trying to get other endings? Like, does the story only change depending on one team I choose to go through certain doors with, or do dialogue choices matter too?
I remember. Well, for the main endings, it's only what doors you go through, what teams you team up with. But there's like 15 endings, like 15.
No, 999 only has.
No. There's 15 branches, but right, only like 5 endings. So you could hit the same ending even if you take completely different paths. Because there's no like in game.
Flowchart.
Yeah.
I would recommend after you've gotten a couple of endings, I would say go to GameFAQs and look at the flowchart thing.
Yeah,
that's pretty helpful, so you don't end up getting the same ending again.
Yeah, because I like think I got the same ending like 3 times in a row and went fuck this, and then I just found a spoiler-free flowchart.
Yeah.
For the true ending, when you're taking that path, there dialogue choices do matter. If I remember, there's like 3 or 4 different like things that you have to select specifically to make the
fuck this game
to make the ending happen. No, Craig, shut up.
There's only one good Junpei, and he's in Persona 3.
Never heard of him. I only know Jumpy.
Sorry if I bored you, Craig. Now, whatever. He also says Azam was hilarious when he was on.
Was he? Was it all that creaking humor they used to do?
Daniel has a very long...
Oh, man, this is a long one.
This is... Basically, he's asking about shoot-em-ups and how we feel about them. He laments that a lot of the Japanese ones are exclusive on the 360, which is strange given it's a 360 in Japan. But some of them are region-free, which is good. He says the newest installment in Dodonpachi, Sai Daiojo, is region-free. And it got good reviews. I like shoot-em-ups. I like shoot-em-ups because most of them are no bullshit. There's fucking cutscenes, tutorials, none of that garbage. I can sit down and I can actually play a game.
Don't play Castle of Shikigami 3, then.
I have. And that would be the other side of that coin. I love their immediacy. I love that they're just video games, and most of them are okay with that. I'm okay with that. Not very good at them, but...
Yeah, I like that they're just, like, pure skill-based gaming. You don't just have that a lot anymore.
Yeah, there's and, that too, yeah.
I do die a lot.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Like, I could get, like, semi-good at them, but I'm never, like, on a level that, you know, you see on YouTube or anything. But, no, they're fun. I don't own a ton of them, though.
I own a few. I own some.
I prefer the vertical scrolling ones to the horizontal scrolling. I don't know why.
I don't know why either.
It just feels better.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not really sure why. You play any shmups, Chris?
No, I mean, I play them from time to time, but I've never been a huge fan, and it's hard for me to get into them because, you know, they have such a dedicated fan base, and it seems like they're kind of directed towards them, and it's hard for me to
and you feel like
get into something that's so, you know, difficult and directed towards those people who enjoy that, so
I see.
It's hard to jump into that.
I feel like a lot of them have scalable difficulties.
Yeah, it is pretty easy to play.
It might just look that way for me as, you know, somebody looking from the outside.
Yeah.
But the few that I have played, I do enjoy, but I just don't play a whole lot of them.
Ricardo asks us how we're doing. How are we doing? I'm doing pretty good. You guys doing pretty good?
Doing good.
All right.
I'm getting... I had this 16 ounces of beer, this pint, and so I'm a little excitable, so my voice is kind of raw right now. But other than that, I'm doing great. He says, thank you. Thanks a lot for the Proteus Steam code. He must have been the one. I threw a Proteus Steam code because it came in the... I had already bought it some time ago, and I got it with the current Humble Bundle, so I threw the Steam code up on the Facebook page, which is why it pays to be fans of us on Facebook, because we'll flood your feed with pictures of shit we got in the mail. and occasionally a code for something on Steam. He was thinking about buying it, but now he doesn't have to, so it's good. Yes, have you ever heard of Newer Super Mario for Wii? It's it has a link here. It's newerteam.com. I'll put a link in the show notes for this for the people to check it out. And it's a fan-made game that runs on the Homebrew channel. I want to say this actually sounds familiar, so I want to say I've probably heard about it in passing, but I didn't know anything about it.
I have heard of this. I know Guillaume's talked about this over on his podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I have played it myself. I do find it weird that there's a newer Super Mario, you know, fan game ROM hack. When most people say that there are already too many.
Man, Chris, where are you going, bro?
Super
Mario.
Chris,
whoa. Seth, are you there?
Yeah.
Stop talking. Seth.
Yeah.
there goes the bitrate again. You guys sound like crap. And Chris was cutting in and out. But no, Chris had a good point. Very vaguely. To sum it up for people who couldn't hear that, our listeners, namely, Chris made a good point that he finds it interesting that there's this fan-made project for a newer Super Mario Brothers when there's, you know, so much whining about how there's already too many commercial ones. And I think that is a good point. Are you guys still there?
I am here.
I am.
Man, I can hear you fine, Craig, but Seth sounds very patchy to me.
Yeah, same. Chris sounds like crap. You sound great, Craig.
Yeah.
That is really weird.
I would say it's at my end, but there's nothing sucking the band. I got nothing open. There's nothing. This isn't, you know, I have Skype and I have the mailbox open. That's all I have. Ick. I hate you, Skype. And, of course, Skype is good. Skype now on every Xbox One. Hope you guys... if this podcast doesn't deter people from Xbox One in terms of our conversation, the call quality should. And he says that, you know, last episode we asked Hugh what he thought of the quality of the podcast as a listener. And he says for him, his show is always good because what I like about it and what makes me listen every week are our personalities and how we interact with each other. So he digs it. And that's good. I'm glad people dig it. It's hard to know. Like, I'm often proud of the things that I'm involved with, but it's hard to know really just how well it's being received because you're involved. You're on the other side. Stuff to say. Especially when, you know, people say they like the podcast, but there's no overwhelming, like, whoa, like, I can't remember the last time anyone started in iTunes or anything, you know? I make a video and I get the thumbs up and there's a clear indication, I get a couple hundred thumbs up, there's a clear indication that people are digging it. You know, it's a little bit harder with the podcast because, you know, the audience isn't as vocal and it's not as easy to give, like, a thumbs up or stars. Like, you have to do that in iTunes and, like, nowhere else. So it's really hard to measure that sometimes.
As long as people keep giving us reader questions, I guess we're keeping somebody interested.
Yep.
Yeah. You say people keep downloading it, so obviously they must hate it.
That is true. That is true. Helsinki Rocks, who got in last minute, was concerned that his question would not come in, and he asks if we think Sonic Lost World looks a lot like the canceled Saturn game Sonic Extreme. He says it looks like they're going back to try and realize a game with that concept. It's been a while. He got some links here, and I'll put them in the show notes on TVLS.net for episode 122. And I'm not going to click on them because I don't want to risk anything else with the pandemic.
Yeah.
But the last time I saw Sonic Extreme, it's been a while, but I don't think so. Like it did, I don't think it reminded me of Lost Worlds.
It had a bit of that abstract level design.
The level design was not as coherent. That is a good point. But it didn't have those tubular shaped levels or anything like that, right? Like.
I don't think so.
Okay, because to me, that's the iconic part of Lost World. I mean, you look at that, and it has, like, you know, these weird gravity-defying tubes or whatever. And to me, that seems more noticeable than the, you know, like you said, the sort of non-coherent level design in terms of, you know.
Yeah, I think it had that, and I think it had some of the switching between, like, 2D and 3D areas.
Oh, okay. But, I mean, so does Sonic Colors and stuff. I mean, that's not...
Yeah.
Necessarily.
I mean, it just visually, it does look a little alike. Except Sonic Extreme has, like, this awful fisheye lens.
Everything looks stupid the last time I saw that. I was like, maybe I'm glad this game didn't get made.
And Sonic just looks like he moves like poop.
Right. Now, if I remember correctly, was Sonic a sprite in a 3D world?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was gross. So, you might be reminded, but I'm not, and I think, actually... That's actually a good thing. So. And that's all the feedback we have this week. So again, you can go to TeamList.net and check out the mailbag, and we hope that you do. And so now we're going to talk about some games we've been playing lately. I actually have a couple things I want to talk about here, but I think you guys are sounding pretty good there. You guys want to say hey real quick, just to make sure?
Hey!
Yeah, you guys sound good. So while you guys sound good, you guys should go first. And Chris, it's been a couple weeks for you, so why don't you start off?
Yeah, I'll go since I wasn't here last week. I have been playing Oracle of Ages, Legend of Zelda, on my 3DS because I am stupid. It's not a bad game. I hate on this game and both of the Oracle games a lot more than I actually do, but, you know, there are a lot of things I don't like about them. You know, a lot of the things you talked about last week, Craig, with your wonderful food analogy, as you're obviously known for.
Food, what can I say?
I do think that there are some more issues with it, though, like, specifically the level design and the pacing. You know, Oracle of Ages is obviously, of the two, supposed to be more puzzle-oriented, but I feel like they just tried to take the kind of puzzles you see in, like, the 3D N64 games and translate that into, you know, a 2D game, and I don't think it worked particularly well. Mm. You know, there's a... I think level 7 is very similar to the water temple in Ocarina of Time, where you have to, like, change the water levels. And I you know, we talked about this a couple months ago, maybe, when we talked about A Link to the Past, and you said that wasn't super puzzly, and I think that's what I don't like about these games, is they don't feel as well-paced or as brisk as some of the older games.
My problem is that the pacing is destroyed in the overworld, and I've had this conversation with Seth, and he feels the exact opposite, for what it's worth. But I hate the fact that the overworlds are so puzzly, because to me the overworlds should be the sort of antithesis to the dungeons. You want the puzzles and all the combat and that kind of stuff. That's why you made the dungeons. That's why they exist. The overworld is like that sort of cathartic connective tissue where you have the downtime. You can explore, enjoy the sights, play some mini games. Like, I don't want to sit there and change the fucking seasons every 3 seconds and ride a fucking kangaroo and climb this wall and, like, all this other... Watch out, dodge the fucking witch. I don't want to do that stuff. It's annoying.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I can see why they went in that direction, to make things, you know, to maybe lengthen the game out a little bit. You know, you see that in Link's Awakening, they have some side questy stuff in between the dungeons, but I do think they went a little overboard with this one.
It's the same problem I had with Skyward Sword, where, like, it was just, like, there was just no break. Like, even the overworld was like, well, I'm swinging on this vine, I'm bouncing on this log. Like, it was just all dungeon stuff, when I felt like I wanted a break from that dungeon stuff.
Yeah, I like to be able to explore the overworld in a Zelda game, and I don't feel like you get that so much in these games, because you have to go, you know, do a dancing mini game or go items on this island or whatever.
I like the dancing mini games. I need to replay these games.
You guys want to know something funny though? After all that bitching, I downloaded those games right after I bought them. I paid a ton of money to buy them in the box. I mean, I gotta download them. Like, I already have all the other Zelda games on there, so I did download. I actually did play a little bit of Ages. I wasn't going to talk about it because I really don't have anything new to say, but I actually did play a little bit of Ages myself.
Yeah, I mean, I complain about these games a lot, and I do think they're weaker entries in the series, but, I mean, I wouldn't have played them 4 or 5 times in the past if I didn't like them, you know? So, I just think that they do certainly have their issues.
Did you like them when they first... Because I actually loved them when they first came out. Like, my thoughts on game design, like, evolved over time. And not to say evolved, like, over anyone. Like, anyone who likes these games is clearly not as evolved as me. I don't mean it that way. But I do mean, like, my thoughts changed, and what I view as good game design changed over the years. So, well, I'm being very hyperbolic for the sake of comedy on the show. I do not dislike the games as much as I let on. But I do find them very, very problematic. And that changed over time. Did that change for you as well?
I wouldn't say I loved them, but, I mean, I did like them. I think my main issues back then were just the random characters that appear, you know, like Tingle and...
I know, like the mailman. Like,
I didn't have as many issues with, like, the level design and the pacing back then.
Because back then, back in the day for me, like, the idea... And this is a really terrible thing to really want in a series, especially when your favorite series is Zelda, but, like narrative coherence and, like, continuity and stuff, like... I mean, I was a very different gamer when I was younger. Things like story was actually very important to me. And the fact that I'm, like, I'm playing this game, like, why is the postman from Hyrule here? What's Tingle doing here? Like,
why is
there
the hand from the toilet?
Right, so it broke. And, of course, I don't value that stuff much anymore, and I certainly don't value it in Zelda. But for me, when I was younger, that completely destroyed that for me. I was like, what? These games don't make any sense.
Yeah, that was my biggest issue with them back then. You know, I may have, you know, in my mind said, well, these dungeons don't feel as good as a regular Nintendo one. You know, that may have been a thought to me, but I certainly couldn't articulate it the way I can now.
Mm.
So, but they're definitely good games. They're worth playing. Don't let me sound like I absolutely hate them, you know. Because I certainly have done that a bit on Twitter. I've said, you know, go buy Link's Awakening. Don't play these games at all. That's not the case.
I would say there are better games to play. Like, I'm not... I wouldn't say that you shouldn't play them, because for $5, you might as well give it a shot. But I would say don't waste your time. That's
what I'd say if you like Zelda and you want to play a new Zelda game, certainly
right, especially because the barrier of entry is pretty low. I can't outright say, no, you shouldn't play this game. I can't do that either.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd recommend people go out of their way to get it, but if they're looking for it, I certainly won't discourage it.
Then I'm on that page too then.
Yeah. The other thing I played this week is Mario and Donkey Kong, Minis on the Move, which is the new eShop game in the Mario versus Donkey Kong series, or maybe it's not because they took out the verses. I don't know.
So it's Mario and Donkey Kong. Like
it's Mario and Donkey Kong, so, yes.
Oh, okay.
They're buddies now. It's like a buddy cop movie.
Yeah, exactly. Game. it's the Citizen Kane of gaming.
It's the Citizen Kane of all monkey games.
It's the Lethal Weapon of gaming.
It's the Turner and Hooch of gaming, all right?
Oh, God.
I've heard some good things about this game. You know, I wasn't a huge fan of the Mario versus Donkey Kong games after the GBA one because it went into that, you know, whole Lemmings kind of style. This is more 3D, and it's not, you know, a 2D, you know, not platformer, but, you know, side-scrolling, you know, you have a depth to it. It's basically you have to guide Mini Mario around a checkerboard kind of stage. He moves automatically just like he did in the old games. But you have to change the squares. You basically place tiles.
So it's
that
pipe
have,
dream.
Yeah, similar to that, whatever that is.
No, when I was a kid, my stepdad had like this game disc for the computer. It was like 501 games, and I'm pretty sure like most of them were unlicensed or something, or I don't even know, but. There was one game that was just, it was just like this game where you just like arrange stuff on the floor and try to get whatever to the ending.
Yeah, I mean, Pipe Dream is like ooze. You got to get like ooze to the other side. It's like the hacking mini games in BioShock.
Yeah, that's a pretty good comparison.
Oh, and also, there's a mini game like that in Feel the Love for DS. Feel the Magic? Feel the Magic, that's the name.
Yes, there is.
Yeah. All right, so it's Pipe Dream. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. I mean, I think they add enough wrinkles to make it interesting. Probably to make it distinct from those other versions of the same type of thing. The basically tiles fall down on the side of the screen, kind of like how you see like the upcoming pieces in Tetris. But like up to five pieces can pile up on the side, or if you let them pile up that high, the
so
game will end.
So they're random? Like, how do you solve puzzles
they're
random
not
pieces?
Random. I think they always fall the same way.
Oh, okay.
But you do not have to solve the puzzle a certain way.
I see.
You know, you can. There are definitely different variations of how you can solve the puzzle, which is pretty nice. You know, a lot of puzzle games, there's only one solution, whereas in this one, there are definitely some different ways you can solve it. There's this garbage can square in some stages where you can throw away tiles so you don't necessarily always have to use all the tiles in the same order. And if you throw away, usually there'll be a number on that square where you can.
What the hell was that?
That was a file on the computer that just. my MacBook doesn't respond as well anymore, so I end up inadvertently clicking things. My apologies.
That's okay. There's this garbage can square, which basically has a counter on it, and if you throw, you know, three pieces into it, then it'll give you a special piece that'll transition between the different shapes, and it can be basically anything you want.
So it's almost like a super guide, almost.
Basically, yeah. But you can only use it by, you know, throwing away certain pieces, which, you know, you may need those to get through the puzzle. So it's kind of a, you know, risk-reward type of thing. There are bomb tiles, so you can destroy existing tiles on the board. So you can put a new one down so you can, you know, go over a tile you already went through. If you make your path into, like, a loop or a figure eight, you can get extra time or extra points or something. And sometimes what it does when you make a figure eight or a loop, the tiles will rise up into the sky and then you run around until the time runs out or whatever. And sometimes there will be, like, extra coins up in the sky which you can collect only by doing that. But it's, you know, the puzzles are pretty complex. I like it a lot, you know, with all the little wrinkles they've added in. It's definitely more interesting than it sounds at first. You know, it's not just the game from BioShock or what have you.
So you're laying down the tiles as everybody's walking around, right? It's not, you don't have any prep time beforehand?
He doesn't start walking until you lay down a tile, because basically in every level I've played so far, the tile right next to the start is empty. As soon as you lay that down, he will start walking automatically. You can tap on him and make him go faster, but you can't stop him or slow him down.
Huh.
There are a few different modes, and I've only played the first mode, so I'm not sure how those work, if there's any different wrinkles in that way. But everything I've played so far, he does walk automatically and can't stop him.
Do you think NST is just, like, sick of shit of making these games?
I have to imagine they are, because, I mean, this is at least something different from the other ones, even if it is, you know, kind of a similar concept. But I would imagine they are sick of it.
I bet they're like, just give us a Wave Race or something, please.
Oh, God, please. Oh, my. Dude, Wave Race on 3DS? How do we make that happen? Can someone get a Kickstarter on this? Because I want to play that.
Please understand.
God, that would be so good, wouldn't it? Like, wouldn't the sense of speed and stuff, like, jumping off the, oh, God, now I'm, I got my, get myself a little bit of a chubby right now thinking about
that. Now, the weight physics just make Wave Race. God, I love those games.
So good. So good.
I want a new Wave Race. Sorry? Fuck you, why'd you have to bring that up? I don't want to play this game anymore. Mario and Donkey Kong sucks.
Yeah, it does. It's not Wave Race. That's the review.
That's all I played this week.
What about you, Seth?
I've been playing the Rayman Legends Challenges app on Wii U. That shit's addicting, dude.
I played it a little bit. I should get back into it. But
did you play any of the challenges, Craig?
I did not. So explain these challenges. How do they work? Are they daily, like weekly? How do the challenges work?
There are two daily and two weekly challenges.
Are there leaderboards? Does it show like who's doing what? Or
yes, there's leaderboards. You could separate them into friends, your country, or just everybody who's played.
Which is pretty nice.
The levels are either like endless runners, or they're get to a certain distance in a certain amount of time, or collect a certain amount of lumps in a certain amount of time.
Can you replay old challenges and just not be ranked? Or is that
you
like...
You cannot.
Okay.
You get trophies depending on how well you do, and the trophies are based on a curve. So, you know, whoever does the best sort of sets, like, the standard for everybody else.
Right.
It's an average. Like, for example, I was playing last night, and then I happened to play, like, right when the challenge was turning over. And actually, they're really damn strict. I was, like, in the middle of the challenge, and all of a sudden just ended and went, time's up, motherfucker, new challenge is up.
Wow.
I was like, damn. So, I mean, I started that level, and I did, like, just horribly. I, like, died right away because I wasn't familiar with the new level yet. And then, like, I had the Platinum Trophy for all of, you know, that 10 seconds I played again, and I got even further, and then I was, like, only at a Silver Trophy by that point. The trophies, like, give you points, and you get points in your profile, and that, like, ranks up your whatever, just ranks up your rank. And when you have a high enough rank, then you have access to more challenges. Like I said, there's two daily and two weekly challenges, but only one daily and one weekly challenge is available from the beginning. Once you get to a level 2 rank, then you unlock the other daily challenge, and then I think you need a level 4 rank to unlock the other weekly challenge because they're harder. So, I mean, there's a lot of different, like, one of the endless runners is, like, through Land of the Livid Dead type area. One of them other ones that I was playing was like through a vertical tree area where you're mostly like wall running and wall jumping and stuff. But one of my favorite types that they have up there is Murphy's Dungeon Endless Runner, where you're not actually controlling the player. You're controlling the environment around there. So there's an automatic person running, and you just have to manipulate, you know, platforms and ropes. You got to know what ropes to cut, what ropes not to cut, levers that open up paths and stuff like that. I think it's a really fun twist on the Endless Runner.
And so you have the entire day or the entire week to improve your time or whatever on these levels, and the game scores like your best one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it keeps your best one. You can also I turn them off because I find them distracting, but, like, also people who are around your rank but have done slightly better than you, you could turn on ghosts for them as well, so you could see, like, how well they do and maybe, like, give yourself something to challenge against.
Well, this challenges app is, like, quite a bit better than I initially thought.
It's pretty damn involved. And then there's also, like, a bunch of characters you could unlock, too, just from the lums you collect by playing the games. You don't get your points for a challenge until that challenge ends, because, like I said, like, the how well you do could change depending on how well everybody else does. So, like, you might have a gold now, but then everybody else might just do, like, a lot better, and then you'll have a silver by the time it ends. But then, like, once that ends, and, like, when you start up the app again, it'll be like, you got a gold for that challenge. Here's 5,000 extra lums for you, and then you could use those lums to buy more characters and stuff. So there's a lot going on with it, and it's really fun.
Yeah, it sounds really interesting. I downloaded it, and I don't think I ever even played it.
Well, I played like the single play. I just played like the levels that it had in it. That's what I did. And then I was like, okay, I got other shit to do.
Yeah, it has all the levels from the. They're actually the same levels from the demo that was released.
Yeah, I didn't check that out.
Yeah, so it's those same ones, but then there's like the whole challenge section in there too, which is just a ton of fun. I've been playing Revelations for Wii U. I'm not big on this game. Like, it's all right, but I literally don't understand the praise it gets. Like, everything that people like about it, I think that different Resident Evils do better. Like, just the Jill sections, I think something like Resident Evil Remake on GameCube is just a lot better than that. The shooter sections, I think, like, Resident Evil 4 is a lot better than that. It's just sort of...
That's the thing, that's what I like about the game. It takes all, like, these great things from other Resident Evils and puts it into one game. So while, yeah, you might say that, you know, the exploration is better in Resident Evil 1 and the shooting is better in Resident Evil 4, like, it takes all these great components and puts it into one game.
But it doesn't do them as well.
Well, maybe not as well. I mean, because you're right. No, you're right. Because, I mean, Resident Evil 4 in particular was, you know, was exemplary with its action, especially, you know, compared to past games. So you may have a point that perhaps the shooting isn't as good as Resident Evil 4. But I still think it's great. And I think that, you know, having all these individual great components into one game, especially when most Resident Evil games really only do one or two things all that well, I think is noteworthy to have. Like, it's such a really good, well-rounded game, and I don't think any Resident Evil in the past has been well-rounded.
I think it just feels like a collection of mediocre Resident Evil elements.
Okay.
Also, the scanner, I feel like, breaks a lot of the Resident Evil feeling. And, you know, you sort of need to... Jill could, like, hold, like, all of 5 bullets at a goddamn time for some reason. So you need to scan a lot in order to find ammo.
The scan's sort of unnecessary, because, I mean, there's an item, and then you pick it up. Like, it's really not much different than there's an item there. I mean, you find the handprints, and then you scan enemies, which is sort of like how, like, the camera works in Bioshock, where you scan an enemy, and, you know... In Bioshock, you research them, and you get bonuses, but in this, you scan an enemy, you get a percentage, and then when the percentage hits 100, you get a bonus item.
Yeah.
That's okay. I mean, that stuff's fine, but, like, I don't know. I didn't mind the scanner, but I did feel like it was kind of superfluous.
It is. I really don't think it's necessary. Actually, one of the cool things, though, is... I don't even... the game can link up with ResidentEvil.net, because, you know, the game told me when I started it up, it's like, would you like to create a ResidentEvil.net account, blah, blah, blah. So I went on ResidentEvil.net, whatever, linked the two games up. You get, like, for doing stuff on the website, ResidentEvil.net, you could get... you get points... And then you could, like, spend those points on, like, different guns and stuff. And then you could, like, then transfer those guns from the website into your game for use in raid mode and stuff.
That seems needlessly complicated, but okay.
It is. But it's kind of neat, though, that you could, like, I don't know, just send different guns and ammo and stuff to your game. Hmm. And they also have, like, weekly challenges, I guess. Like, right now there's, like, bonus experience points for raid mode and if you kill certain types of enemies and stuff like that. So, I don't know. They got, like, this semi-neat interactive thing going on. The website runs slow, though, dude. ResidentEvil.net runs, like, everything loads forever. I don't know what's going on with it. God, what else have I been playing? Tokyo Crash Mobs. What
did you think of that? Because, like, I held off, because I looked at it, I'm like, this is Magnetica, or Puzzle Zuma, or Puzzle Loops of Dread. Like, I like how goofy it looked, but at the same time, I'm like, I'm not paying, like, what do they want, like, $13 million for that game?
I got it when it was on sale, so I didn't pay the full price for it.
You only paid $8
million? Yeah, but...
Gotcha.
Like, I played it, like, right when I first got it, like, I played the first level or two, I was like, whatever, this is dumb. I've been playing it more, and it's fun now. It's actually, like... They start switching stuff up, like, the point of the game is, you know, to mash hipsters together so that you can, like, make them fly up.
Literally, it's what they're called in the game. It's like
they're called hipsters.
They're called hipsters.
I hate the word hipster. The word hipster. So what does it even mean? Like, I don't think anyone can even agree what the word hipster means.
Well, especially not a hipster. Don't tell a hipster he's a hipster because he'll tell you why he's not a hipster.
No, that's true.
But no, they're called hipsters in the game. So that's whatever. That's what they're called. You've got to match them up. Then they fly up into the sky or whatever, and then the line gets shorter, and you can make your way into wherever you're trying to go. That's Gracie's mode. Then there's also Savannah's mode, and I think the hipsters are trying to kill her in that mode, so it's actually more pressing. They're like trying to get to a button, and if they hit the button, they launch you into outer space. I don't know. I don't try to make sense of the game, but
I don't think you can.
But it starts like they start adding elements to it besides just matching different hipsters together. Like there will be like a beach ball or something. They'll start getting passed through the line. If you hit that with somebody, then like it'll explode and just kill everybody that's right in that section. You can get items. Like there's an umbrella item, and the umbrella item will like switch. Well, everybody in line will open up an umbrella. So instead of like having green and blue and yellow and red and all these different colors, the umbrella will only be two colors. So you could just like hit one of them, and then you could get like a really easy combo chain going. There's also like a UFO item where it'll suck up all the hipsters of a certain color if you want. So I think it gets more fun. And in Savannah mode, she's the white broad. There's a white broad and like the Asian chick. The Asian chick is Grace. In Savannah's mode, if you want to throw a hipster like to somebody that's on the other side of the line, say there's like a you got to hold the hipster but without releasing it, and then all the hipsters in line will jump up, and then you could like bowl the hipster under them, and then that's how you get to the hipsters behind them in a separate part of the line. So it gets pretty fun.
Sounds pretty involved. Actually, it sounds a little bit better than I. Still, though, what is the price of this game? What is the standard price of this game? $8, $11, something. A bit higher than I was willing to pay.
I have no idea how much it costs, Craig.
What did you pay? $5?
I want to say somewhere between $5 and $6.
So even $6 on sale.
$5 and $7, somewhere in there. I don't know. But no, it's like the first couple levels are basically why I wasn't into it, because it's just the basic matching colors, whatever. But then it different stuff starts happening. It's more fun.
Right on. Anything else?
Nah, that's all I can think of.
All right, I've been playing a few things. I played the Project Cross Zone demo, and it's funny because like I have it reserved, and like no one knows what to call this. Like Japan with their X's calling them cross. Like I get why they call them cross. Like the X is crossed over itself, but. GameStop employees call it Project X Zone, and like the stupid little GameStop TV where they have a bunch of talking heads talking about games, call it Project X Zone. But like you put on the demo, and then that little
Project Carasso Zone.
Yeah, you get that little the 3DS like splash or whatever before you open the game, and it does clearly say Cross Zone.
No, it says Carasso Zone. Correct.
It is pronounced as if they were Japanese. Yeah, you're right. When I first saw this game, I didn't think it was going to be terribly complicated. It didn't look complicated. It's monolith. It basically looked... The combat is pretty much exactly like Super Robot Tyson on the DS, where it looks stupid complicated, but really all you do is mash a button and maybe mash another button at a particular time to extend your initial mashing combo. It's not that complicated. So you have like this strategy wrapper around all this. You have an overhead view like Fire Emblem or Advanced Wars, and you have all these different characters from all these different games. One of the GameStop employees, like my GameStop doesn't really have like there's a couple dudes that are terrible, but most of them are actually pretty knowledgeable and not that bad. One of them said like John McClane from Die Hard is actually in the game. Because Namco has the rights to Die Hard games.
He's semi-mistaken.
Okay.
It's first of all, it's a Sega game, the Die Hard arcade game.
Is it? Because didn't Namco publish like the Die Hard Vendetta or whatever, like on the GameCube? Like I thought Namco had the rights.
Maybe, but I'm pretty sure it's not like John McClane. It's from the Die Hard arcade, which in Japan was released as Dynamite Deca.
Okay.
So it's really the Dynamite Deca main character. When it was brought over to America, American Arcades, it was John McClane, but it's still not.
I wonder if that'll be vocalized as John McClane then.
I heard it wasn't, but I don't know.
Okay. Does it look like John McClane?
Yeah.
Okay, so we can pretend.
We can pretend it's John McClane.
Okay, so he wasn't completely wrong. See, so that's basically the perfect example of my GameStop employees. Not completely wrong, but maybe not always there. So you have all these different characters, and they tend to work in, like, units. You have, like two characters that work as, like, one. And you move them around the map, and you engage enemies. And then it goes to a battle screen. It's, now instead of being overhead, it's 2D. And your characters are on the right, the bad guy is on the left. And then you just mash A, and it juggles them. The point here is you don't want the enemy to hit the ground. So you mash A to juggle them. But then you can, like, if there's more of your allies nearby on the map, you can then hit, like, R or something to have them come in and then do, like, a, you know, super cool move to continue your juggle. It's really basic. It's really satisfying. Like, it's fun to watch. Like, actually, like, I really like all the different... I mean, there's tons of characters in this game. They all look great. They're all animated pretty well. It's the, you know, the same kind of, like, let's break up the character into individual sprites and have them kind of, like, pulsate around. But it doesn't look as, like, shitty as, like, Pokemon Black or something. It, like, actually looks halfway decent. And the 3D effect looks nice. Like, the backgrounds... I'm not quite sure whether they're 3D. I think the backgrounds are polygonal during the battle scenes. And the characters are sprites. And you think that would look janky, but it actually looks really good in 3D. I actually really like that. But the combat's really basic. It's not explained because Monolith. But I find that there's something satisfying about this. I do have this pre-ordered. I'll be picking it up because the game's going to be like decent at best, I think. Well, decent at least, I should say. And it comes with a bunch of stuff. I think it comes with an art book and a soundtrack. Does it come with anything else, Seth? Do you know?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, the first run actually comes with stuff for free, so there's
that. Yeah, it's part of the bundle, whatever.
Yep. And the game, I actually kind of like the demo, but it is really basic. Like, and it's weird. It's sort of jarring how basic it is because I remember like people were talking up like Super Robot Tyson on the DS, and I was like super psyched to get into it. And the localization on that game was really cool. Atlas, I think? I mean, the localization was terrific. Like, the characters well realized the jokes were great. And then you play the battle mode, and you're like, I'm just mashing A while characters bounce. Like, you just – basically, you shoot them or kick them or punch them, and the bad guys just bounce around the screen as you're doing this. And you don't want them to hit the ground. You have a certain number of hits. Like, you can only hit, your enemy a couple of times if they hit the ground. So then, you know, when you run out of hits, that, you know, then you want to call in anyone who's nearby or activate a super if your meter is high enough for a super to keep the juggle going even when you've run out of hits. It's basic. It's really basic. And when I played Super Robot Tyson, I'm like, this is it. This is the battle. Like, I'm just bad. Imagine this button to juggle them. But no, it is pretty satisfying, and that has a lot to do with the art and the animation and just the feel of cracking the enemy. So it's not bad. The demo's on the eShop. It has 5 uses, which is, you know, we laugh at this use thing. I don't know why they do the uses. It seems really stupid. I don't know why they do this.
Well, you know why, Craig. They don't want you just playing the demo forever and not buying the game.
Yeah, but you can say that about any demo. Like, I just it seems so weird to limit the uses. I mean, not that I'm going to play, because like most of, like, we laugh at like, oh, 30 uses. Why are they limiting us? But like at the same time, I'm like, am I really going to play this demo 30 times? 2 times and I'm good. I'm all set. I'll buy the game or not buy the game after that. I don't need to do anymore. So, you know, even 5 times, like, it's like hilarious how low that is. I was told by some Europeans that their demo was 30. So I don't know why ours is 5. But
a lot of times it's little kids who will just like keep playing it over
and
over.
That's a good point. That's a good point. I hadn't considered that. I think 30 uses is fine. Then you want to limit it. Okay, fine. 30 seems like this number where it's like, it's really high and you can get some playtime out of it. But then sorry, dude, you got to buy the game. 5 though. I'm just like, what? 5? So, I mean, I'm going to play it twice. I played it once. I'm going to play it again to get a better feel of it. I mean, I already have it pre-ordered. So I'm going to actually, I think it's pre-ordered and paid for. So I'm getting the game, but I want to get a better feel of it. But I think overall I liked it, despite how, you know, simple it is. You played this, right, Seth?
Yeah.
And what did you think? Do you have similar thoughts?
There's some things I don't like about it compared to Namco Cross Capcom.
Which plays similar, right?
Which, yeah, it's, I mean, I'm pretty sure the two main characters from that game are also in Project Cross Zone. They're not in this demo, though, but they're definitely in the game. One of the my biggest complaint is that Smokey is barking right now. My biggest complaint, in Namco Cross Capcom, each character has an AP bar, a special bar, a MP bar, and like a dizzy bar. They got rid of the dizzy completely in Project Cross Zone, as far as I could tell. But they've condensed the AP bar, the special bar, and the MP bar. They've condensed all of that into just the cross points bar. And right. then,
I mean, to be clear, this is confusing because there's an XP bar and then there's an EXP bar. And of course, because it's not explained to you, you think the XP bar, which is very clearly labeled, is your experience points. It's not. That's what governs like supers and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's XP, but it's cross points.
Cross points, that's, exactly. EXP is experience. Cross P or XP is when you can do specials. And it also factors in the cost. Like when an enemy attacks you on the field, you can pay 20 cross points to like defend or counterattack. Or whatever, so it takes that away, mm-hmm. and then of course it depletes it slows your ability to use the super because you just spent some of that cross point bar.
Yep,
that was confusing. I didn't quite get that at first because, and of course they didn't tell me. So
in Namco Cross Capcom, like defending and attacking and stuff, that's used with AP. That's your AP bar, and then when you want to do like would you, if you want to heal yourself with magic or something, that uses your MP bar or whatever. In this game, it just uses the XP bar for everything, and that bar is shared with everybody on the map.
See, that's here's the thing. I am okay with zero sum stuff. I actually think it makes it much easier when there's a zero sum aspect. So like, I'm fine with just the one XP bar, but the fact that it's shared, man, what a pain in the ass.
It is. It's like, oh, do I want to defend here? Because I don't know if that person's going to... And then I need to heal myself, but I don't know. My XP's going to... Yeah, exactly. So you gotta watch that cross point bar. And actually, well, I mean, it makes the game harder, but I think it might make the game a little too harder. Because in Namco Cross Capcom, you could just like build up everybody's special bar and then just like unleash some badass specials all on like one of the... whoever the boss is on the stage at
but
that
time. But
you still
have to put in the time and the effort to get to that point. It's not like, you know, it's just, you know, you're given the keys to the kingdom and you can just do it right away.
That's true.
You have to
That's
earn true. That.
It's kind of easy to earn in that first game, though.
Okay.
But this one, it's like, oh, it's frustrating because, like, you're attacking this one person. You could, like, I could do this super move, but then I'm not going to be able to defend with, like, any of my other characters right afterwards. And I don't know. It's kind of hard. Also, don't like how like on the map screen you move with the circle pad and then you move the camera with the D-pad, which seems completely backwards.
Especially for a 2D game.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
I mean, I just adapted. I'm like, whatever. I didn't really think much of it, but now that's a good point.
But yeah, no. Otherwise, it's kind of really similar to the first game. Like the moves are a lot. You still like, just push a direction and hit A, and then they launch into this like. Whole attack sequence, but they're like way more flashy and complicated in this one compared to Namco Cross Capcom. That one, you got to watch the timing more because certain moves won't connect into each other well unless you time them like perfectly. In this game, you could sort of just, you know, keep hitting it.
Yeah, there's not, the timing doesn't really play as much of a factor here.
Yep. But no, I'm still getting it. Seems fun.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing. Like, yeah, no, I seems fun. So I played that. And I played Remember Me, which I was really looking forward to. And I'm enjoying it. It's got weird reviews. Like, there were positive reviews, there were negative reviews, there were a lot of reviews in the middle. And I like games like this. I love when no one can agree what the fuck to think about a game. And I like it. Now, there are two things about this game I feel like, unequivocally, like, you can't really complain about. Like, and that's the art and the music. Both of those are absolutely terrific. Like, the world is fully realized. The art style, like, it looks like your generic realistic game, but the you know, there are some subtleties in it that, you know, give it its own personality, and it looks really great. And the music is excellent. The story is pretty good. You know, it's like this classic sci-fi where it's not just sci-fi for the sake of showing you, like, you know, flying cars or whatever. It's sci-fi that... you know, raises questions, you know, ethical and moral questions, and I find that stuff kind of interesting. I haven't finished the game, but I feel like while it's great that a game like this does that, because a lot of games just don't. They're like, check out this sweet laser rifle, bro. I don't feel like it adequately, like, delves into the concepts that it's – I mean, it might later, but then again, I've read reviews that says it doesn't. But so far, it hasn't. It doesn't – I don't feel like it really addresses the concepts that it drums up. It touches on them, but it's still just a very sort of, like, shallow, surface-level kind of thing. It could have been better. But the premise in general is great. You play as a...
What, can I get an example of one of these concepts that's not fully realized, I guess, in the game?
Yep. So this takes place in the near future. It takes place after some war, and it's devastating. So you have, like, Neo-Paris, and because Paris is devastated, so it was rebuilt.
It's got to be Neo whenever you rebuild a city.
Right. You play as a memory hunter named Nilan, and she doesn't remember anything. And that's because she was part of, like, a terrorist group that were called Errorists. And in the future, social media is all about sharing your own memories. Not everyone, but most people have, like, these implants on the back of their neck, you know, that connect to, like, their spinal cord. And they can record their memories, and they can share them with people. So you can actually, like, share emotions and stuff with people. And so this is
that. Like an avatar.
Yeah, I suppose so. I was like, what? The Last Airbender? Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
The Titanic movie.
Right, with the blue people and the trees and stuff. Yeah, no, gotcha. So Nilan was a memory hunter. And so some people, what they do is they actually steal memories right the fuck out of people's heads out of the implant, which is called a Sensen, which is sort of a shortened mashup of sensory engine. And some people are able to use tools to interface with people's sense without them knowing and just take memories right out of their head. So like vault codes or shit like this or whatever. Mm-hmm. But she was captured. I don't know why. She was captured and her memories erased, probably because she was part of this terrorist group or whatever. And so like what you can do, Nilan alone has this ability to remix memories. She can activate someone's sensen and then dive into their memories, and as she's watching this memory play out, you can go back and forth, you can rewind or fast forward through the memory and change like little details that actually affect the outcome, and then the person that you're jacked into remembers something completely different. And it didn't happen that way, but they remember it happened that way. So really what this, you know, drums up is this idea of like our memories are our perception of reality. It may not have happened that way, but who are we to know? Like, our memories are all we have. So if someone then goes into your head and changes that, like, what an asshole. Like, I'm playing an asshole in this game. Because the first memory you remix makes some woman believe that, like, was it her husband or boyfriend, her significant other, like, died in a hospital. And he didn't, but she believes that he did. And I don't know if it's the government or Memorize, which is the company that created Sensen, is behind it.
Sensen sounds like a really bad anime character or something.
I actually like the name. It's fun to say Sensen.
Like, hey, this is Sensen.
It's Sensen is what it is.
It sounds like Sensen.
Right, like exactly right. It sounds like Sensen, and that's how it's spelled. But it's really the breakup is that Sense and then an angst sensory engine.
Anime character, got it.
You're like, whatever. But you're a dick. You just made that woman believe like her husband's fucking dead. What a for your own end. Like, that's what an asshole thing to do. And that could be totally addressed later. Like, that could be addressed like, wow, Nilan, you are the monster all along. But I heard that the game touches on it, but it doesn't really get too deep into it. And that's the thing, that's something that can be really explored, but it isn't explored enough, you know? There are these concepts about memory and perceptions of reality and stuff, which is really, really cool. I think it's really cool that a game's doing that, but it just doesn't, you know, break the subject enough as much as it should. But I like the game. The combat feels a lot like Arkham Asylum. It's very smooth, combo-based. You know, people get exclamation points over their head, and then you hit dodge, and you flip over them, and you customize your combos, not the button presses. The button presses are static, so like a basic, like, light combo is square, 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 or what would it be on the Xbox controller? Because I'm playing on PS3 because my Xbox broke.
Triple X.
X, yep, thank you. XXX. So that doesn't change. The button presses themselves don't change. What the effects of each press does is what you get to customize. So, like, you can make it so one button press restores health. One button press, you know, gives you cool, like, what is it? Makes your cooldowns, like, go faster on your on your special moves. Or it does like a more powerful hit. You can do, you can deal more damage. So you don't customize the button presses so much as you do what those button presses do. And, so that's pretty neat. It's a very basic, it's almost like very Brawler-esque, you know, you got light attack, heavy attack, and then you, you like, as your memories come back, you get access to more special moves that have cooldowns. So like,
did you pre-order and get your like Shoryuken and spinning bird kick and stuff?
I'll have to check my receipt. I don't know.
All right.
Is that is that really a thing?
Or you no, they put threw in some Street Fighter moves for pre-order bonus.
From GameStop?
I know from at least Best Buy. I don't know about GameStop.
Then I'll have to check the receipt because they print those codes on the receipt. No, actually, I got like a comic book. I got a comic book.
That's right. I think GameStop had a comic. That's right.
Yeah. I actually kind of like that. It was kind of neat. It's very high quality, too. It's like very thick paper and everything. And it came with a comic book. And then at the end of the comic book was actually a preview of the art book. And I'm totally getting the art book because, like I said, there's one thing you can't – there's a couple things you can't sell short in remembering, and that's the art and the music. So I actually have the art book pre-ordered on Amazon. But the combat's pretty basic, but you do have some agency over how it plays, and you do get some special moves. The platforming is very – it looks Uncharted. You climb on this. You jump over to that. But it's not very dynamic. It's basically just traversal. And so instead of running in a straight line, you're climbing up walls and jumping over to things. It's not hard. There's no real challenge to it. I heard some people complaining, like, oh, it's not dynamic like Uncharted. But, like, actually, by the time I played my fourth Uncharted game, I hate the fact that every single ledge I grabbed on just fucking broke or I fell. And he's like, and then, like, I can't tell you how many times in Uncharted Golden Abyss he said, I'll find another way around. That's all that the entire game should be called, Uncharted, I'll find another way around. And, so no,
Uncharted Detour.
Right, exactly. So you can criticize the game for being more straightforward in that regard, and I wouldn't say that you're wrong, but it's also not like insulting your intelligence and making you think the platforming is more complicated than it really is. Because it's pretty simple. So the game feels like basically if you look at a lot of these individual concepts, the combat or the platforming or even the story, like they're not that great. Like there are definitely games where you can look at them and say that there are games that do these things much, much better. But I feel like it's a game that's, I don't want to say more than the sum of its parts because it makes it sound like it transcends something and it really doesn't. But it's individual parts, even if they're not that great individually, really come together to like a really fun experience. I actually really, really like the game. And I'm glad because I was really looking forward to it. And I saw some of these reviews and they were not awesome. I was like, I think I was at work and they all went up at a particular time and I was on Twitter and everyone was tweeting about them. And some of them were positive. Like you go to Polygon, their Arthur Gies review, his was pretty positive. But then you go to like IGN, it's like 5 points something or other. IGN's was actually really weird. They actually took a line out. And this is why you can't trust these fucking reviews, man. They said that like, they said something along the lines of like, in the future it'll be a cult classic, but now it's not that great. What kind of line is that in a review? And it's probably, the point is, the thing is, it's actually accurate, but how do you review a game where you go, oh, I know it's going to be great later, but who gives a fuck now? Like, how is that how are we reviewing? It doesn't make any sense. It could be totally accurate. I actually think it will be accurate, but it's such a weird thing, and that's re-edited out. You can't see that now, but it was there. And but that's probably a good point about the game, where like it's concepts and you know it's AAA sort of appearance betrays you know just how simple and sort of culty it is. And I think you know people might pick it up later for like $20 and think like, oh yeah, actually this is pretty neat. But I don't think a lot of people are going to be too into it right now.
I think it'll be $20 next month.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I like it. And am I going to recommend everyone run out and buy, like, a really pretty beat-em-up with simple platforming for $60? Maybe not. It was worth it for me because that's what I was looking forward to when I got my $60 out of it. But keep an eye on it, at least. It's fun. And finally, I played Proteus. And Proteus is a PC or, you know, computer game. It's on Steam. It's like $10 is the full price, but it goes on sale every now and then. And it's actually part of the current Humble Bundle, which probably won't be up by the time I get this podcast live. But I've been tweeting about the Humble Bundle and the game, and I've been posting about it on Facebook, so hopefully people have either looked at the game or hopefully the Humble Bundle. But Proteus, I downloaded it a while back ago. Actually, when I got my new Mac, I don't think my old one could run it. And it's a pretty modest game, so I'll tell you about my old Mac. It's a game that has no goal and no guidance, although it does end. It has an ending. You're dropped into an ocean, like looking at an island, and you just sort of swim over to it. And the graphics are like, they're very pixely. It's 3D. It's a 3D, you know, full roaming island you can explore on the ground. But everything looks like big, blocky, single-color pixels.
I've seen a lot of screenshots. I never thought this game was 3D.
Really? No.
Yeah, that was my impression, too.
Yeah, and it's really great how it works out, because that's what it looks like. It looks like a 2D, very blocky, almost like Atari. Like the pixels are not like NES pixels. We're talking Atari or ColecoVision pixels here. And it's beautiful. Like, the world is just it's mostly about exploration. You're on this island, and use headphones because the ambient music is dynamic and it's brilliant. It's excellent, and all the animals make noises. So it's inhabited. Like, there's like frogs that hop around and insects that that fly through the air, and there's bats. Like, at night, like, fireflies will come out and they all play like little melodies or like little chimes. Like, the fireflies will be like bleep 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 bleep, and it's so cool. It's so cool. I don't really want to give anything away because I feel like exploration is key in this game, like figuring things out for yourself. So, like, there are things that you can, there are things that happen, things that you trigger that change the seasons on the island. So you start out spring, it's rainy, it's cloudy, it's overcast, and then something happens, you do something, whatever, becomes summer, fall, winter, etc. And when you cycle through them, that's when the game ends. And, it's just really cool to see how the island changes. The island is procedurally generated. Everyone's island is different. It's not very big, but it really stuck with me. It's a really great experience. I really do recommend that everyone check it out. But I think it's important to go in understanding, like, you're not going to go in and find the secret of the island, find the, you know, the Triforce hidden in a cave, and, you know, it's not Lost. It's nothing like that, so...
I'm out.
Thank you.
You had me sold. Nope. I'm out now.
You just put on headphones, go with an open mind, understand that there's no goal, there's no guidance, and I think you might enjoy yourself. Just take a look around and see what's there. Like, the first thing I do is follow a frog. He's not leading me nowhere. That frog ain't taking me nowhere. He's not doing anything. But he's like, blimp, 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 as he hopped away, and it's just, I don't know, it's kind of fun. I really enjoyed the game.
I think I'm going to play it right now. I downloaded it last night, so I have it. So
yeah, no, definitely check. I went from title screen to title screen again, because that's where it goes to. There's no credits or anything. It just cycles back to the title screen when it ends. And about 40 minutes, because I picked up on what I needed to do pretty quickly. But, you know, it might be shorter, might be even longer for some people if they don't quite get it, or if people are rushing, it might be shorter. But I took my time and really enjoyed what was going on, and yeah, it was over in about 40 minutes. And I really, it was a terrific 40 minutes, well worth the $10 I paid for it. So I do definitely recommend people check that out. But that's it. That's why I've been playing. So,
sweet.
Do you guys have anything you'd like to add?
Bruno Dillinger is the name of the McLean doppelganger.
Bruno Dillinger, is that the U.S. name?
No, that's the Japanese name.
Oh, okay. Bruno Dillinger.
Yep. So, I mean, if you look up Bruno Dillinger Project Crosszone in Google Image Search, he'll come up, and it's John McClane.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. All right, yep. So that's good to know. And, I want to thank everyone for listening, and until next time, you guys take it easy.
Boy.
Bye.